Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. It's 1:08 in the morning. We're live in the...
Jeez, Jess. What was that, Roger? I was going to say, Jess is not playing the Carol Burnett show?
No, this is Merv's theme.
Okay. Well, he did not have a great theme. Sounds like the beginning of a soap opera. Was he a daytimer or a nighttimer?
He was daytime.
Yeah. That's a weird daytime beginning, though, isn't it?
It was a great show. He had John Lennon on, Muhammad Ali. He had everybody on. Oh, my gosh. I loved watching Merv.
Is he on in reruns anywhere? Do you ever see old
no.
episodes?
No.
Somewhere, right?
There's stuff on YouTube. Parts of shows are on YouTube. Oh, you know what? One of the classic TV show
Adam
stations.
Is in, master control if you need to talk to him.
Why, yes, you can.
One Adam 12, one Adam 12.
Now, was that through the newsroom or was that through Jess? Where did that just
That was
come
through
from?
Jess.
All right, Jess, potting you down. Let me know when I should bring you back.
You caught what I did there? Get it? One Adam.
I potted 12. You down, so now you got to talk into my ear if you want to talk to me. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, for you keeping score at home, apparently the show got drunk before the St. Paddy's Day weekend show.
One Jess, too many green donuts.
Jess issued a text message earlier today to the show to all wear green so we could take a St. Paddy's Day photo tonight.
I got it.
Yeah, you look. I told Jess you look like a business dressed leprechaun.
Yeah, my socks are green.
Oh wow, you
my,
really did it up.
My overcoat is green.
I feel terrible. I have nothing green on. I go down for the nap.
You did give fair warning. Were going to try to find something.
Oh, that's right. That's what I responded
Remember?
Back. Well, and I feel bad because I don't have a good... I have like a green button-down, three-button shirt, but a polo, but it's not that nice anymore. And I have, for St. Paddy's Day, when we used to go out, I have like a... My stupid shirt is like the leprechaun from Lucky Charms throwing up.
Oh, that's lovely.
You know?
Yes.
So that's what I have. That's what I would have worn.
That would have looked good
that's
in
very
the picture.
Classless.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was funny. I was going to get my newer dark green shirt and with my off green pants that you can't tell, depending on the lighting, either looks khaki or looks gray. But I've got a new dark green shirt that I was going to wear. But then as I was looking for that goofy hat with the orange beard attached that I have a picture on my Facebook page, I was looking in the closet and go, oh, look, there's my green tie lying on the floor. And I said, well, then I'll wear that with the lighter green shirt.
Yeah, no, so, you look very dapper.
Well, that's about the only thing I got going for me.
I think we should go hit a bar after this. You know, the Admiral's open till 6, Raj.
Ooh, hot dang.
I laugh as I see that on the billboard on my way in. Open till 6 a.m. Saying, well, I guess that's where we could
Well, wait a minute. By the
show.
Time we get out of here, oh, wait,
well,
you get out earlier.
Well, you still have a 5:30 newscast, right?
I'll get to the car by almost 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not going to work out for you.
Yeah, it's about another hour drive to get up there, 45 minutes or
Where's that place at?
It's way out on, I think, like Central or Harlem and something.
It's
or
in
maybe
Chicago,
not that
isn't
west.
It?
Yeah, it's in Chicago.
Well, that thing could take 45 minutes to get to from here than at 5:30 in the morning.
It's not an easy drive up there, I don't think. Not that I go traveling around there much.
Careful.
I don't. I just know where it's at.
Bridget's not listening.
Who?
Your wife.
Well, she knows where it's at, too.
She might not like that you know so well how long it takes to get there.
Well, never mind. Yeah. Just get on with the show, Merv.
Good thought, Roger. By the way, Jess's whole board apparently shorted out. She spilled her margarita in it.
Oh.
And so there's going to be an email from Steph on Monday.
Oh, no. No more drinks around the audio equipment.
No more drinks in the studio. No more guests in the halls. No more food stealing from the fridge. We're cracking down around here. Jeez. So poor Adam's trying to fix it. Adam, who's now working, he's going to be crabby about it because there's no pizza tonight because Roger made us quit the pizza.
I didn't say
Adam
nothing about pizza. You can do whatever you want.
Please.
You can do whatever
Every
you want.
Every time we order pizza, you shouldn't be ordering the pizza. You shouldn't do that. You're Mr. like guilt on the shoulder. It's not the devil because the devil would tell us to order it.
Yeah, I know.
Not exactly an angel. The leprechaun on our shoulder telling us not to order pizza. and making little, everybody else crabby just because you want to be good.
A little Jewish leprechaun.
Let's hear you say oy vey in a Irish brogue.
I can't even do a Irish brogue without oy vey.
Can't imagine.
Oy vey!
Well, that was just Jewish.
Yeah, it's I didn't about hear as the Irish in there. I can't do Ash, hurry me gotta, you got no vey.
That's getting there. Roger Badish, the Irish leprechaun Jew.
Thank you.
Okay, that's very interesting.
Green bagels, I'll go for that.
See, whenever people do the green with like, were there Krispy Kremes here today?
Yeah, there's
or something?
Still
was
one or two unless they've
like
gotten
that?
All eaten up now. Yeah.
It's just a weird holiday to dye the food because green food never looks good.
No.
Outside of lettuce.
No.
Or, you know, edamame or peas or whatever.
Stuff that's naturally
green. That should
green.
Naturally, yeah, yeah, should be green.
Yeah.
But whenever bagels are green, I think really old moldy. That's what just, you know, naturally pops in my head. And when I see the green Krispy Kreme, that doesn't make me, you know, excited for them.
No.
Any breaded type food that you turn green, that doesn't work.
Is there a green breaded food? Naturally
Not
green?
Normally, I don't think. A green breaded food. Well, yeah, okay, so.
Oh, somebody just whispered in my ear. Zucchini bread, but is that actually green or is it more?
I don't know if that
more gray.
I don't know if that gets green, but there was a pistachio cake we used to make.
Oh, well, that's going to be naturally green.
And it was really good.
Or a mint cake or pie,
mint chocolate chip.
Oh,
there you go. It's not naturally green, but it's good.
Yeah.
As you can tell, we're dieting around here.
Yes, you are. Even though I did have a delicious.
What'd you have?
I had a sweet and sour. Chicken with two vegetable egg rolls and some fried rice.
Oh, I just got the worst text.
Uh-oh.
Hello, I think I'm back in business now.
Oh, Jess, are you back? All right, I'll pot you up and you can
because
see
because I just
talk.
Heard that and I think
Hello.
So did everybody else.
There she is.
Hey!
Hello.
Hi.
So 773 texted, the Admiral is on Lawrence and Pulaski. I live right by it. And then here's the greatest text of the night.
Uh-oh.
There's nothing but sadness outside of there around closing time. All the men who stay till 6 a.m. thinking that one of these ladies really loves them. And yes, sir. Stay till 6
a.m. We can hear you guys.
And we will run off and get married.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Your mic is on, Jess.
Hello.
Yeah. Welcome to Electronics 101, your first lesson in this 10-step series.
This is not my fault, people.
Colonel McCormick sheds a tear.
This is great.
312 texts, I'm there now. Join me and the ladies. There you go. Well, maybe that's...
Listen to Mac.
Why is the microphone on? What are you
we
guys
can
doing?
Hear you guys.
I need my mic off anyway.
Your mic is on.
Well, it is now.
But you're talking to him and it's on. We're hearing everything.
Really?
Yes.
You shut the mic off.
We're still hearing that.
It is off now.
Is the intercom?
The mic is
the
still
intercom
on. We're still
is
hearing
on.
You guys.
I think the intercom
No, she's
is...
coming through the mic, I think.
Oh, okay.
Say, count to five, Jess, out loud.
One.
Yeah.
Keep going.
What comes after that?
Keep going.
Four.
Yeah, it's coming through the board. He's That's so coming weird. Through the board. Hearing you guys through the board. Okay, everybody. Well, I appreciate that you stayed up late on a weekend for this. God help us. There's going to be a memo about us next week.
There aren't enough pages of paper for that memo.
May I say something stuff. Really quickly?
Well, whatever you say is going through the air, so be careful whatever it is.
Roger, you look really nice today.
Thank you very much, Jess. I saw you speeding by. I didn't have a chance to see what you were wearing, but I'm sure it's wonderful.
She just threw on a dirty old green shirt.
I did.
Excuse me. This
Roger
is clean.
Pulled out a tie. You didn't really pull out all the stops on this, Jess. I'm
wearing
just
a little necklace, too.
Oh, you are? All
a
right,
green
I'm
necklace?
Sorry. Yeah.
Nice.
Is it green?
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to give us good luck.
Oh, well, it's really working out. You're killing it with the necklace. Let's go burn that thing. Pretty much everything's gone wrong so far.
I think your engineer deserves some pizza.
I think so.
Basically, at this point, if we were a Boeing airplane, Trump would be declaring an emergency and just grounding our asses right now and saying, you know what? It's really not safe for you three to be doing anything. Roger doesn't turn off the mic when the lung comes
no,
out.
No, I... Sorry.
But he did turn away. I love that, Roger. After all these years in the biz, when a lung is about to come out, kids, don't turn off the mic. Just turn away from the mic so they can just hear it reverberating off the windows behind.
Thank you. Yeah.
We just have no clue what we're doing. Any
None
of us.
Whatsoever.
It's all probably because I didn't wear green.
Probably. You're the one who jinxed it.
Hey, Jess, turn off your mic and keep talking so I can hear it in here so he knows that that's happening. Mic is
hello,
off now?
Hello.
Yeah, hello, hello. Hello. Lean into the mic and say hello, hello. The good mic.
Hello.
Yeah, that's coming right through loud and clear. All right. Adam knows what it's Adam knows what's going on. He's on the scene. Apologize that there's no peach, Adam. It's all Roger's fault.
No, it's...
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There's no other way to say that.
No.
Not. 630
says,
nothing.
Are you guys drunk? Now just runs off. She's just giving hugs to people.
Yeah, Curtis.
She blows up the board. She doesn't care.
No, well, Adam's working. She had to get out of the way.
Dave from Monroe, Wisconsin. High class quality, major market professional radio. See, it's the curse and the blessing of AM. They stuff us in the middle of the night so we can't hurt anything.
Right.
Yet this is the time that the signal's at its most powerful.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Blasting all across the country.
Mm-hmm.
They could pick us up, you know, in Dallas right now if they tune it in.
Yeah. The signal goes
good,
as far
clear
west.
Night, bouncing off the ionosphere. Yeah. And, you
it
know.
Goes as far west as the eastern border of Nevada. Think of that.
But like in Denver, you can't get us, right? And that's close.
Oh, sure you can.
I thought
sure you can.
I thought,
sure
well, no, it's because they have a 720.
I can get the Denver station.
But they
in
have
here.
720 west of the Rockies, I thought. I thought we were only clear channel east of the Rockies.
I don't.
I know there's other 720s now, so we don't bounce as
well. Yeah,
as good as
there's
we used
the 720
to.
I worked at in Vegas. And,
oh,
and
is that a 720?
Yeah.
Get out of here. I didn't know that.
KDWN. It was 50,000 watt directional. So we could not interfere with GN signal. That's why I kept saying GN signal can kind of drift to the eastern border of Nevada.
Okay.
Because then KDON signal went west.
Takes over.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, if you're listening to us from around the country,
wherever
you
may be,
you here, and at some point tonight, we'll have a professional broadcast.
Send your call cards to Matt Bubala,
what
care of
call
W.
Cards?
Call cards are for shortwave operators. Spike Odell would know because he's a shortwave operator.
That's right.
My brother was one. He built his own shortwave out of an old radio. And call cards are when someone hears your signal, they send you a postcard.
Yeah. Now he's taking the microphone apart.
Oh,
I'm going to turn Jess off. Maybe I won't hear that, but.
They send you a...
What would be great is if he takes the mic off and we still
hear him.
Now, that would be a Twilight Zone episode. He's holding the cord and they're talking and I hear it. Oh.
That ought to be your theme song.
Oh, there we
with
go.
All
wow,
the,
fit tonight.
With all of the strange occurrences that you talk about on your show all the time.
Yeah,
that's right.
That would be a great theme song.
Hey, did you see that show's coming back? That Jordan Peele,
did
right?
you see the little... trailer or the teaser?
No, do they have one already?
Oh my god, it's awesome.
It was just announced recently somebody's going to be a part of it. Who is it?
What do you mean?
So Jordan Peele,
yes,
from Key and Peele, who made Get Out.
Yeah, he's the producer. He's
the
executive producer.
And then I saw somebody announced that they're going to be part of the show.
Like on one of the episodes?
I don't know. I don't know if like be the Rod Serling person or if Jordan Peele's the Rod Serling person. I'm not sure,
but it was
a name.
Here.
It was like Seth Rogen or somebody announced that they're proud to be part of this. Because it's not going to be a regular cast, because those stories
are different. All right, here's a Wikipedia.
And now,
Jordan Peele will host the show.
This is the part of the show where we read from Wikipedia.
Just
Jordan Peele's hosting from the show.
Just come in there and just whack.
All you kids writing your research papers at home, I know the newsman's reading from Wikipedia, but that's not how you do it. It's something that you have to hand in or cite sources from.
And this has sources. Would you like me to start citing them?
Yeah, but anybody can just jump
December
on there and change
19th,
it.
December 19th, 2012.
You can't completely trust the Wikipedia.
Nelly Andreeva, Bryan Singer to spearhead Twilight Zone series reboot for CBS TV series.
Nice.
Deadline Hollywood archive from the original of 10/13/2018. Retreat. All right, never mind.
Somebody just texted, coming in loud and clear in Denver.
See, I used to be able to pick up, and I can't remember the station.
What's up, Mile High Max? 720, that is the area code for Denver. We should make it to Denver.
Yes, I used to be able to listen to a station from Denver that used to carry the sports broadcast. So whatever that main station is there, I could pick it up here in Chicago. It would make sense.
Yeah, I don't know what the big station out of Denver would be.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Okay, is there a good name attached to the Twilight Zone?
Like KOA Radio.
Oh, we're jumping over to that. Okay.
Sorry, 8:50 a.m. All right, Twilight Zone. Here are the people who are scheduled to star in the episodes. All right.
Okay, so it's got different people every episode.
Yeah. Tracy Morgan.
Let me ask you.
Greg Kinnear. Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen. Okay, I was right.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen's in one. Let me ask you, Roger, because you know the original Twilight Zone better than I do. I've seen a lot of the episodes, but you'll probably know this. So they're announcing all these famous people that are going to be in these episodes.
Right.
Were there famous actors in the original one?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Were they famous already? Or they later became famous? Because, like, is Shatner in one?
William Shatner is in the
one of the famous
most famous ones, the creature on the wing of the plane.
Oh, is he the guy in the plane?
Yes, he's the guy in the plane.
That is such... And you know what's funny is I need to see that episode again, because I remember better right now the movie, which you hated, but I loved.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was really good. I think you should rewatch that and see if... Because it's probably been 15 years since you've
Nightmare
seen the movie.
Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, William Shatner. It's a Good Life. No, wait, that's not the one I'm looking for. Oh, here it is. Time Enough at Last. Starred, where is it here? I know it's here. I know he's here. Hold on a second. It's the eighth episode of the original, and it Burgess Meredith. And this is in 1959. So he was a Hollywood star at the time.
Burgess was?
Burgess Meredith, yes. Who went on to play, of course, in Batman.
He did. And in the Rocky movies.
Yeah.
And on My Three Sons, I think, right?
No. You mean like as the grandpa, as the uncle?
Yeah.
No. Burgess Meredith wasn't an uncle in My Three Sons.
You
there
sure?
There were only two uncles. And the reason why there was a second one is the first one passed away.
Oh, well, that's sad. Yeah. You're sure Burgess was never on, maybe not My Three Sons. Was there another show like My Three Sons that he could have been on? Like,
No.
What was The Courtship of Eddie's Father?
Nope.
Chance he was in
Gosh, no.
Let me tell you about my best friend. I would watch The Courtship of Eddie's Father, I think, when I got home from kindergarten or something like that.
No,
I believe on Channel 44.
He was, he was the narrator for the movie Twilight Zone. He did
Burgess
appear.
Burgess Meredith was?
Yeah.
Really?
He played two roles in Rod Serling's Night Gallery. You remember that one?
Nope. Never saw that show.
Oh, where the pictures, they kept zooming into the pictures.
I hear you through my ear, yes.
Okay. He was on a lot of TV shows, but mostly radio and cinema.
All right, hold on. We have to check Jess's equipment again.
All right. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Jess, I just heard you through the IFB like I should, and now I'm going to pot you back up.
WGN now concludes this test of the...
Hello.
I hear you there. Okay.
It's not even on, my mic.
It's not even on. He can hear us.
But we hear... It's the mental telepathy.
Oh, but I have the producer button on, at least. Should I turn... Oh, here we go. Oh, let me turn it up before you do that again.
Yeah, before he sends shockwaves to everyone. He was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in
Somebody text
Rocky
Robert
5.
Redford at Twilight Zone.
Could have been. Let me... Time Enough to Last. Let's see. The monsters are due on Maple Street.
Are we just reading a list of the episodes of The Twilight Zone?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to go off the pictures as quick because I can.
But why?
I can see the pictures faster.
Know why we're doing this? I can't.
Well,
remember.
You were asking about people who starred in the old Twilight Zone.
Okay.
Were there famous people
just trying
who starred in the Twilight Zone?
All right.
Wow. Jeez.
Are you wowing me? Am I getting a wow?
Yes, you are wowing. I've wowed you.
Texter says Shatner is also in the episode Nick of Time.
Oh, okay. And I just pulled up another episode called The Obsolete Man, and Burgess Meredith again, playing another character. Fritz Weaver was in this one.
All right, Fritz Weaver's, here's my thing, Roger.
Yes.
I mentioned Burgess Meredith and My Three Sons, and you said, nope, he wasn't in that. But I distinctly remember a TV show, and maybe I'm wrong, but I remember some TV show. Are you really rolling your eyes at me after you just read the Wikipedia page?
Yes. Wait, I can read the facts. These are facts. What would you like to know about his TV stuff?
All right, Burgess Meredith, I swear I remember an episode of some show.
Okay.
Where they're playing pranks on each other. And they try to convince the older person, I swore was Burgess Meredith.
Oh, Wild Wild West.
That's not what I'm thinking of.
Okay. He was in a lot of Westerns.
All right, it's not a Western. Hold on.
Okay.
So there's like kids involved in this.
Huh?
And what they do is they keep shortening things around the house to trick him into thinking he's actually growing taller in his old age.
Is this another episode possibly of The Twilight Zone? He starred in four of the episodes.
This was like a goofy, silly thing.
But it's possible.
It was like kids and stuff like that. I swear
there were kids in The Twilight Zone.
But it was like, it wasn't like a freak out at the end, Rod Serling tells you, blah, blah, blah. It was just like kids playing a prank and learning a lesson about you shouldn't do that.
No, I'm not seeing anything in his TV work to suggest that. Sorry. No.
Well,
sorry.
Maybe I was wrong then.
I think you were. I'm sorry.
Are you two just looking at what's going on in here? I got Adam over my shoulder, Justin here. Are we having a meeting or what?
Yeah.
Should I go to commercial or do we want to talk this out?
Well, I've got to do the news eventually.
Oh, it's time for the news. Well, hell.
What?
What the heck? Let's just throw it to news, then we'll figure out where we're at here, okay? How about that?
That's 1:30 up to you.
In the morning, everybody. 312-981-7200. You're welcome to jump in at any time. Actually, after Roger does the news, we're going to check in with our friend Michael Heidemann, producer extraordinaire here at WGN, host of Sound Sessions podcast at WGNradio.com. He's out at South by Southwest in Austin. He's going to let us know what's going on there after we hear the news headlines from Roger Badish. Go ahead, sir. Sounds like the Ice Capades.
It's the theme from the Jack Parr Tonight Show. Before Your Time.
It is?
Yep.
I will say Johnny had a better one.
Well, yeah.
Better theme. Jack Parr was the originator of the Tonight Show, right?
Actually, he came second. You know who was the originator?
Alan Ladd?
Nope. What? Alan Ladd?
Alan Ludd?
No.
Steve
not,
Ludd? Oh, I mean, Steve...
Steve Allen.
Steve Allen. Yeah. I had an Allen.
You were close, but no cigar.
Well, I don't smoke cigars anymore.
That's
so
good.
That's just fine. Hey, this week on Chicago's Best, if you want the best, you got to head west. An all-new Chicago's Best of the Burbs coming your way Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Okay. So we're working everything out. Let me just clean up a little bit here from the text line. We got a bunch of texts about the Twilight Zone. Thank you, everybody, for mentioning all the famous people that were in the Twilight Zone, the original one. Redford, Burt Reynolds, Buster Keaton, Art Carney. So a lot of great names on the original, so I didn't remember that, but thank you. Also, somebody 708 says, tell Matt that it was William Demarest on My Three Sons. Right. Now, I don't know if that person's saying, yeah, I remember that episode. That wasn't My Three Sons, where they tricked him into thinking he was growing taller, or if they're just telling me who was.
That was William Demarest was the second uncle.
Okay.
William Frawley, who was from I Love Lucy, was the first uncle, if I remember correctly.
Okay. But I don't know if that episode, if does anybody remember that episode where they were tricking somebody into thinking they were growing taller in their old age?
On what show?
I thought it was My Three Sons, but maybe I'm wrong about that. You don't think that was an episode of My Three Sons?
It could have been My Three Sons,
did they
yes.
ever pull pranks on My Three Sons?
But Burgess Meredith wasn't
I
in
understand that.
Okay.
Oh, fine. I'm wrong about that part.
You were wrong. But there could have been a prank.
You don't know that I'm wrong.
Burgess Meredith, yes.
You don't know for sure.
I'm positive.
You know that he wasn't on My Three Sons, but maybe some other episode of some other show that he was on. Maybe he was on a Leave It to Beaver.
No, he was not on Leave It to Beaver.
According to Wikipedia.
According to his resume.
Oh, did he send you his resume? Is that what you're looking at?
It's online.
On
IMDb.
What? Okay, all right. At least you let that one know. You are crabby tonight.
No, I'm not. It's just you're like questioning everything I'm saying.
Did you not have a gluten-free dinner?
I did have a gluten-free dinner,
all right,
and it was delicious.
We're worried about you.
Too bad you can't have a pizza.
Oh, now he's throwing down. Now I see how it is. That's how it's going to be tonight, huh? Okay. Well, let's move on. Michael Heidemann is a star producer here at WGN Radio and the host of the Sound Sessions podcast at WGNRadio.com. And he is out at South by Southwest. Good morning, Michael. How are you, buddy?
Hey, good morning, Matt. Good morning, Roger. Good morning, Jeff. No, it's great to hear from you all.
Don't good morning, Roger. He's on my list. He's out. Just good morning, Matt. Yeah. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to all of you. I was listening in. I think that the show you were talking about was The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis.
Really? You were just naming any old show that you can remember is what you're doing. I know that for a fact. But I appreciate that.
That might be the case.
I've never seen an episode of Dobie Gillis. Was that starring Gilligan? It was, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, he was one of the characters in it.
Oh, okay.
He was the hippie.
Okay. All right. Hey, Michael.
Bob Denver.
You're down in Austin. How's that going?
Yes, I'm down in Austin, but it sounds like you guys are having more fun down in Chicago. I miss you guys a ton. Yeah, down here for South by Southwest. Believe it or not, this is my sixth year down here in Austin, Texas. I can't believe I'm getting older and older by the day, it feels like, man.
I hear you. So
yeah.
Explain to me, if you can, and I apologize because we didn't go over the interview beforehand, Michael. I just said, hey, Michael's at South by Southwest. Jess, let's check in with him. And you were gracious enough to come on this late at night. But how did South by Southwest start? Did it start more as like TED Talk type things? Or what is the, or was it a music at first and now it's expanded to a million different things? Give me the 1 minute history of South by Southwest, if you could.
Yeah, South by Southwest is a fascinating story because it was just, you know, two guys who wanted to start a music festival back in 1987, and they wanted to create something that could bring people together, and, you know, they could do speeches and keynotes and really highlight on the music scene that was happening in Austin, Texas at the moment. So they started this music festival. Two men, and I can't remember the names off the top of my head, started it off. They thought they were going to get about 200 people who were going to sign up, ended up growing to 700 people its first year. And now, today, from 1987 on, it's grown from the 700 people who signed up to over 30,000 people who sign up every single year to be at South by Southwest.
Wow.
It's an amazing experience. It now, not only does it cover music, but it covers interactive, that's like technology and what's going on, education, film, comedy, and honestly so much more. It's quite the megatron of music festivals, you can say.
And is it all at the same time, or do they separate out like South by Southwest Tech and things like that? Is it all at once, or are these separate sections at separate times?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So it's separate times, because I think all of it would be just right now. I'm going through so much FOMO at the moment, and for those who are listening, you don't know what that means. It's fear of missing out.
Sure.
Because there's like 1,000 things on my schedule, but it starts off with the education portion of the festival, and I think that runs about a week or so. The interactive slides in around March. This year was March 8th, so around March 8th is when interactive starts, and that runs a week. And then comedy and film are right on the heels of that, and then music, comedy, and film run together for about 8 to 9 days, depending on the year.
So what's the total amount of time that there's South by Southwest of some shape or form in Austin each year?
If you really want to go the full route, and I mean, if you're really ready to hit Austin hard, maybe this is a Roger Badish thing, you could be here for about 2 weeks in Austin, going to music shows, going to comedy, film premieres, and the whole shabazz.
So wait, all these separate little parts of South by Southwest combined in total are only about 2 weeks altogether?
2 weeks, yes. Two okay. weeks altogether.
And are you down there for the entire 2 weeks?
Oh, my God, no. When I was a young lad back in 2013, I did, what did I do? I must have done 8 days, and I think the most I've ever done was 9 days. And I'm here for now, my sixth year, I think 5 days?
Okay.
So it keeps dwindling down, but it's a lot to handle. I mean, there is no better place in the entire world right now than to be in Austin, Texas, and just with the massive amount of people who are coming in. I mean, we had speakers that blew me away this year. Adam Bierman, who runs the MedMen Enterprises, gave a huge speech on cannabis. Julian Castro, possible
presidential contender.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I always have trouble with her names. Yes, famous person who is in Congress at the moment. Yeah, Frank Oz. Elizabeth Moss, Brandi Carlile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The one and only.
So they were all giving speeches. And then the music festival, are they talking or are they just playing music?
They are playing music. So, but it's interesting because they have keynotes during the day. So it's a geek's paradise, I guess you could say. Because during the day, it's like classes and you can go to mentor sessions, keynote speeches by people like Howard Schultz, Shirley Manson from Garbage gave one yesterday. Lauren Mayberry from the band Churches gave one as well, a keynote speech. And then around like around noon, they start up music. So you can either see music at the convention center or you can see it all around the city. And that goes on. If you listen really closely, you can hear it go blasting out of my window right now. And it goes on till about 2:30 in the morning here in Austin.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this all sounds really cool. Now, I saw online you were doing a mentorship speech or something out there this year?
Yes, I was. So finally, the people at South by Southwest took notice of a little station called WGN and put us on the forefront of the mentor session. And the mentor session is different from the keynote speeches because it's when people come in and speak to you. They take time to do one-on-one conversations with you for about 15 minutes to learn more about the music industry. There were some people there who are from A&R, public relations, touring, who help people get their foot in the door, I guess, when you want to get into the music business. And I was able to talk to them a little bit about radio this year.
That's excellent. So so people would just come talk to you one-on-one, or do you give a little speech in front of a group?
So they come and speak to me one-on-one. So they sign, but here's the weird part. They need to sign up to speak to me, which I found very strange because I'm like, it's just little old me over here.
Sure.
But it was people from colleges and, you know, working professionals who were like, hey, I'm an indie music artist from Dallas, Texas. I saw that you were part of the radio station. You had a music show. What can I do to get my music on your show? Or what kind of advice can you give me to get into radio in my small town of Ohio? And I'm like, here's kind of the steps that I took, and here's what you can do. And then by the end of it, the last guy was like, oh, you're from Chicago? I want to be a comedian. What do you know about comedy? I'm like, dude, I think you're in the wrong place.
Oh, that's cool. So it sounds like a lot of fun. And are you recording interviews for future Sound Sessions podcasts while you're out there?
Oh, yes, sir. You can find them all on WGNradio.com and the Sound Sessions Facebook page and the Sound Sessions WGN page all this upcoming week. I got to speak to, have you heard of the band Justice, Matt?
I have not.
Justice is this great EDM kind of inspired, but old school, pure-hearted EDM musicians who create their own sounds and create their own drum beats, guitars. And they just put out this amazing new feature film it's a concert film, but with no audience. And they're like hovering in space, and it's called Iris, a space opera with the band Justice. So I spoke to those two guys, they're French music artists, about their film. Just spoke to this band named Repeat today, who's a kind of like a punk rock Nashville sounding band, who has actually just announced that they're going on tour with the Black Keys and Modest Mouse. And so we talked about them growing up as young musicians and now getting to play shows at the United Center. Actually, they're playing in Chicago in April. So you can run the whole gamut of people that you're going to speak to here in Austin, and it's been a great experience so far.
Yeah, that's cool. Is there a particular highlight, somebody that you saw or met or is speaking there that you're most excited about?
You know, that's interesting because I've been thinking all week the best and the worst. First of all, I'll go the easy route to the best musician that I saw perform. And there is this musician named Lizzo who you may or may not heard of. You've probably heard her songs on the radio or in TV commercials and such. But she blew me away. This amazing singer from Texas, nonetheless, who is going to be taking over the scene. In fact, I looked up her tour dates to see if she's coming to Chicago. Every single one of her tour dates is sold out.
Wow.
She's that. Yeah, and she blew me away. As far as speeches go, I really wanted to see the speech with Howard Schultz, because I know that he announced his presidential run,
yeah,
too. Yeah. And he, of course, is the CEO, or he was the CEO of Starbucks and created that company. But the coolest thing that I think that I did, outside of the great conferences, I saw another great conference with the need for more Black women in media and music culture. And I was, the amount of knowledge that's found within these panels is incredible. Mm. But on top of all that, and all the learning that you do during the day, I went to Willie Nelson's ranch in Lubbock, Texas for his Lubbock reunion show. And I got to see some of the greatest country music acts that I've seen all year. And you get to go actually to Willie Nelson's ranch. You're on his property, and he has this old Hollywood Western town built on his property that,
really?
You get to see, yeah, music acts go to. It's about 40 minutes outside of Austin, Texas. So it's kind of a haul. But that was probably my best experience so far, was going to see Willie.
And how many people went to that? Like, what kind of crowd was there at his ranch while you were there?
So have you ever been to, let's say, like, Summerfest?
Sure.
Yeah, so think of Summerfest and now shrink it down to the size of a penny. It's probably about, I'm guessing, 1,000 people tops.
Wow.
In this tiny little town. And he performs at the end of the night, and opening up for him was Lucas Nelson, his son, who just wrote the soundtrack for A Star Is Born, a great music artist himself, in his own right, and he opened up for him. And the cool part is, you get to see these huge acts like play in this tiny chapel, yeah, that he has on his property. You get to see Langhorne Slim and the Bad Sins perform underneath the tent. They just sold out the Troubadour, and here I'm watching them play like next to a cow. It was wild.
The texter from 608 Michael asks, the best movie you've seen while you were there. Have you taken in any movies?
Oh, yes. The movie portion is amazing. Nick DiGilio would be enthralled with this place. The one that's getting all the hype, of course, is that new movie from, his name is Jordan Peele.
Sure. So yeah, we're talking about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the writer who did Us, I'm sorry, the writer who did Get Out.
Yeah.
Just put out Us, and that is supposed to be one of the most well-thought-out, scariest horror films of the year.
And
so
did you go see it, or it's just playing down there?
It's playing down there. If they premiered it down here. I wasn't able to see it because it actually premiered on the 10th, and I got here on the 12th. But I am going to go and check out the new, I know that this movie came out in the 80s, so I think we could have all seen it probably. Do you remember the movie Pet Sematary?
Sure.
Well, they're making a refurbished version of it, and it's premiering tomorrow night, so I'm going to the red carpet for that and checking out the film. Yeah, so hopefully that proves it to be really good, too. I know the first one scared the heck out of me. So,
hey, producer Jess wants to ask you a question before we let you go.
Yeah. What's up, Jess?
Hi, Michael.
Hey.
I just want to say that I think that you're amazing, and can you bring me back a Willie t-shirt?
Of course, I will. I'll bring you back a Willie t-shirt. How about a bandana and a pair of braids, too?
I'll wear it every day.
Hey, so what? I got to ask, though, before you guys let me go, what happened to the pizza? That was my favorite part of the show.
We quit pizza. We're trying to be healthy. Roger's yelling at us. We can't eat pizza anymore. It's really, it's caused all sorts of stresses here at the station, Michael. You're not missing it.
I'm following the through line night to night when you guys are on, and I'm waiting for the return of the pizza. Yeah. I mean,
maybe after Lent, I'm sure there'll be some pizza, but we're going to try to be good at least for the next month.
Okay, good. Matt, thank you so much for having me on your show again and letting me talk to you guys about it.
Thank you for staying up late for us. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of the trip. When do you head back to Chicago?
I'm headed back on the 17th, and again, you can find all of my stuff on WGNRadio.com. Sound sessions, and hopefully some other spots where I'll show you guys some videos and photos of Willie's ranch and all those interviews that I mentioned, too.
Awesome. We'll check it out. Thanks so much, Michael. Have a great trip, buddy. See you soon.
Thanks, Matt. Take care.
You too. Michael Heidemann, producer here at WGN Radio, host of the Sound Sessions podcast. Find it at WGNradio.com. We've got the news that matters from the stories that matter, actually, from with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up in a few minutes here on 720 WGN. Buddy, yeah. Matt Verbala here with you on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Maybe we got things working. Roger, I don't know. I apologize if you had a bump going there, but we were trying to get our bumps going and blah, 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 blah. Where are you trying to get up and go to? What are you doing?
I'm not doing
you.
Anything.
I see you getting out of your chair there.
Putting my ears back in. I'm not. This was my bump.
They're trying to fix it.
We're fixed.
I know.
Thank you, Adam.
At the last second, I'm hearing more than the usual number of voices in my head at the end of a newscast as I'm trying to.
It wasn't me.
Do wasn't different me. Things, and this was what I had planned for you.
Sounds like the USC marching band.
No, it was the theme to Dick Cavett Show.
Yeah, I don't know all these themes.
You don't know Dick Cavett now
well,
is
I know who Dick Cavett is. I didn't know his theme song.
Yeah.
Nor did I ever watch his show.
Well, those are on now. On one of those classic
TV channels.
Yeah. And they used to show the Merv Griffin Show, parts of it, obviously edited out all the music stuff that they didn't have rights for or whatever. And he had some great shows. He would have some entertainer from Hollywood that was like a B-movie kind of star, and then Bobby Kennedy.
And would he have them together?
Yes. They'd be on the stage together. So he would be turning from the craziness of whatever, you know, the starlet was talking about, and then suddenly there's Bobby Kennedy sitting right next to him talking foreign policy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Sounds
show.
Like, have you ever watched the Graham Norton Show?
I remember it. It's been a while.
Is he on BBC? I'm assuming. I'll see a clip like of some Hollywood celebrity sometimes with Graham Norton, I feel like. And it seems like there's always a group of people there. Like he's got a round table going.
Well, that's the kind of, you know, it's based on the Tonight Show formula. You know, you bring out the artist one at a time, you do a little whatever, and then you sit around and talk and, you know.
So what did you make of this whole college admissions scandal this week?
Well, you know me as a news person, I try to keep my personal opinions to myself. But I sit at home and I'm reading all of these stories about who did this and who did that and which star paid who and which kids went to what school. Mm-hmm. And then I see the things happening to the stars. Losing this sponsor, getting kicked off of that show. I'm thinking, was it worth it? I mean, seriously? Was it? Not only are you losing your income, but you're in jail or you had to get bonded out. And I'm like, did you have so little faith in your child that they couldn't achieve whatever level they wanted to achieve at, that you had to buy their way into a school?
Well,
and I'm not even going to compare it to, I'm not going to be like a lot of people are, well, you know, my parents couldn't afford that. And then, no, just I'm taking that case as it is.
Okay.
Why let the kid go to college and do what the kid wants to do? What is, you know, I know a ton of people who are in the professions, law profession, accounting, doctors, broadcasters, whatever profession you want, that are from schools that are not your Ivy League schools, that are not your top 10 colleges in the country for whatever that specialty is, all right? And there is a support system at all of those colleges. I went to SIU, Carbondale. It's got a great broadcasting school. It was one of the top three in the nation when I went there.
Right.
It went downhill after I left, but no, I'm joking. It's still excellent.
Turned out our Todd Manley, turned out John Williams, turned out Judy Pilat.
Yeah. Brian Noonan.
Okay.
And I know there's about two more who work here.
Sure.
But it's not just here. There are SIU alums. It is a network. And you are given that support when you graduate to make those contacts. Now, what you do with that support is up to you. But the support, no, it doesn't have to be a Harvard Law School. You can go to University of Michigan, University of Florida. You can go to you can go to a junior college for your first 2 years and then go to the university or go to Illinois State University for the last 2 years and major in, say, accounting and still have a support system of ISU accountants, graduates that are around the country, and you can make that connection. It doesn't have to be at a Ivy League school or a top 25 school, UCLA, USC, University of Chicago. It doesn't have to be those schools. Plus, it's going to be a lot cheaper. And my point that I made before is this. If the parent thinks that their child needs that connection in order to be successful in their life, or thinks so little of the child that they need to be someplace where the kid probably doesn't want to go, then there's something wrong with the parent. I can see the parent being proud. Hey, my kid went to Harvard. I can understand that. I can see that there's no malice in that.
Right.
But if the kid could have been just as successful going to the University of Massachusetts and majoring in pre-law and then going on to grad school somewhere and still become a lawyer, well, God bless him. Why not let him do that? What is the deal that you got to surreptitiously buy off a school in order to have your kid go there?
Okay. So let me say this. A, this is nothing new. What's new or I think newsworthy about this is how they went about it.
And that they got caught.
And that they got caught. But when we look at the donations that have been made by big people, the Trumps, other people to colleges throughout the last 50, 60 years, I'm sure you could look back and say that's so interesting that these CEOs, these famous people, whoever, donated all this money when their kids went there. And I'm sure that this type of, you know, that's a lot, there were a lot of stories about legally buying your way into college just by donating, and then they let him in, right? And so,
but that shouldn't be a basis to get into a college.
Of course, it shouldn't be. But of course it is, because colleges are desperate for donations and desperate for money. And what happened here is they weren't donating to the college. They were either paying off coaches or an intermediary who was having people take the test or making sure they got special time or whatever it was to help these kids out. I think parents will always take advantage of whatever they can to help their kids get ahead. And that has happened. The really rich do it by buying a building or making a big donation. And then the people who are medium rich apparently do it by buying off coaches. It's funny because you're in one class or the other. You're trying to spend money to get your kids into the college you really want them in. Or like in our case, Jack going to school next year, what we're trying to do is get him in college for as cheaply as we possibly can, because we don't have $400,000 to throw away and getting him into the special school we want. We want him to go and we can afford to, so he doesn't walk out of there with $100,000 in debt. So that's what we're working to at our level. But I can totally see, and I'm not surprised that parents are doing things like this. Here's the things that surprise me. With Lori Loughlin and her husband and their daughters, she spent about $400,000, it sounds like, from what I've read, to get them into USC through this guy. She's not famous, right? She's on the Hallmark Channel, things like that, but she's famous. You would think if you got $400,000 to spend, you could go to the school and talk about the admissions process and what do we need to do to get in, how do their grades have to be better. Oh, God, we'd really love them to be here. We'd support the school and tell them things like that. If you're spending $400,000, I'm guessing USC likes that. You know what I mean? It's very surprising.
In other words, do it above board.
Well, do it the legally...
above board.
Well, it's not really above board either to pay your way in, right? I mean,
it's
legal.
But if you're going to a school and say, look, you know, if our kid gets in, we'd love to support your school in any way we can. Yeah. Here's $400,000. How do you think you can use it? No, that's still buying your way into a school.
But it's legal, at least.
Legal or not legal, it's still wrong. But it's the kid who's being admitted, not the money.
But it's been done forever.
I know it's been done forever. Because you're right. Colleges, universities, cannot continue to grow and offer the resources that students need with the amount of money that they get in tuitions and with state aid. There is just no way. You're operating a small city.
Well, it depends on the school. Because some schools have billion-dollar endowments.
But that came from money that either graduates gave back, those who became successful.
Or the parents who bought their way in.
Yeah.
With Felicity Huffman especially, like her and William H. Macy... Like, Lori Loughlin, okay, B-List, Hallmark, William H. Macy, and Felicity Huffman, these are Oscar-nominated actors. Someone, you would think USC would want to work with somebody like that, right? They'd want them to be part of whatever. From what I've read, it sounded like, for them, it sounded like the daughter was really getting a bad SAT score and needed help there. So her SAT score suddenly shoots up 400 points.
All right, now wait a minute. All right. Two things.
Yeah.
One, if their SAT score is not stellar, then let them go apply at a school that will accept it. Point two, how come there were no red flags, no news stories about her SAT score shooting up 400 points? If you remember back about 6 months ago, there was an African-American, a female African-American high school student who retook the test. I'm trying to remember the details on this. It's like she had an okay, I think it was the ACT score, had an okay ACT, and then the next time she took it, the score went through the roof, did marvelously better, and applied, and the school refused her. Because they didn't believe that she took the test. They didn't believe that she could have gotten such a higher score. It was a news story. So why doesn't Macy's kid suddenly get a news story about, oh, wait a minute, we don't believe that you got this score. Let's look into this. What happened?
Well, I don't know in that particular case. Because it might have also been that she was being recruited to crew or whatever. You know, there were layers to this thing.
It doesn't matter. It's admittance. You don't get admitted unless you've passed the test, you've met their minimum requirements to get in, and even then it's not guaranteed because they have a certain number of spots open.
I understand.
All right.
But
secondly,
if you have a coach recruiting you, that opens up a spot for you.
Not necessarily, because then you need scholarship money, and they only will recruit.
No, you don't need scholarship money for some things. They said in this story, this is how this worked, Raj, with these sports that are not scholarship sports, like crew or things like that.
Oh, right, right.
If the coach is recruiting this person and says, oh, I really want them to be able to get in because we'd like them to be on this team, then suddenly they get in. Because the school lets them in for the coach.
But you still have to be academically able to handle the coursework.
Once you get there. And that's the interesting thing, and I want to hear more about, because I haven't heard, how are these kids doing in school? I'd like to see a story, and maybe it's out there and I haven't found it, and how all these kids have done while they've been in school. Are they handling it just fine? Are they struggling? You know, the Lori Loughlin thing is interesting, because the one daughter... who's like an internet star and has a media following and, you know, she's doing ads from school and stuff like that. And she's had tweeted stuff. She's an influencer. And she tweeted about how she's not really there for school. She's there for game day and for parties. And I wonder how she was doing in school. Apparently, both of her daughters now are dropping out of USC. Apparently, the day that Lori was taken into custody, her daughter was on a boat of one of the USC trustees or something crazy like that.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. You know how the students are getting in when
parents pay off people and or whatever. And I'm not saying every student, but some, obviously enough to file these court cases. And again, going on for decades, is that there are students who coaches want, that academics want, that are prestigious names, because there may be money down the road that may be, you know, an endowment or something, and they're going to be successful in school. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Catch my drift?
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, these kids, it sounded like all the help was just to get them there, so they might have faced a little more reality. But I just wonder, how's Felicity Huffman's daughter doing in school, and how is Lori Loughlin's daughter's? How were their grades? I don't know if that'll ever come out, but I'd love to see stories about, you know, yeah, they had to buy their way in, but then they were fine once they got there. Or, boy, they really struggled, and they shouldn't have been there. They really bought their way in.
But again, I don't think we're going to know the true picture of that, because if they could buy their way in, it's kind of like...
you think they kept funneling some money to
And you know, you hire someone to do the homework for them, you do this, you do that. What was the movie Back to School?
Rodney Dangerfield
hiring like the greatest minds in the world to write the kids' papers. Come on.
I think was Vonnegut in that?
Yes.
Writing the papers.
Yes.
I'll tame her shrew.
I love that.
That was a good movie.
Yeah.
Triple Lindy.
Yep. But that's a perfect example of it. Yes, the father wants the kid to do well. He takes pride in the family. He represents the father and how the father has dug himself out from, you know, the basement to be right. successful and stuff. And I can understand, but the kid didn't want to be in school.
Well, in that situation, we don't know about these kids. Maybe
I understand.
Their dream was to go to USC. Here's the thing, Roger. Don't forget. So this shows a lot of the unfairness of life, that rich people buy their way into things.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a lot of comments on social media about, don't let me ever hear you complain about diversity placement again, because here these kids are buying their way in and other kids are struggling to get in, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. But I wonder with this, when we think about these kids getting in here, and did they want to get in here? But when we talk about the lower test scores, mm-hmm. some kids just don't test well. So I was a crap student at Mount Carmel High School.
Mm-hmm.
B's and C's. I did, honest to God, I did terrible. I probably had like a 2.4, 2.6 GPA.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a good student. I could have been, but I wasn't, because
you didn't apply yourself.
It was terrible. Right. But then I get a 27 on my ACT.
Well, you lucked out.
I did.
But are you a good test taker?
I'm a great test taker.
I suck at taking tests.
Nailed the test. So that's not fair that
Same
so
here.
Much is dependent on the ACT and the SAT.
Right.
You could work your butt off and get a terrible ACT or SAT score because you just don't test well. So you could also argue, hey, yeah, it's not fair that they're paying off, they're doing this or that, but it's not fair that all of it is based on these two stupid tests that some people just aren't going to do well on, no matter how hard they're working in school,
and
that should be taken more into account.
But our buddy, John Williams, had this...
I think he's going to have her on again
Yeah, she's on again today, this morning. She was great. I heard the interview yesterday. And what she says is that... And remember, I spent 20 years teaching high school. And I taught sophomores, juniors, and seniors, and I was a homeroom teacher to most of them. Okay. So I had to get them ready for their ACTs. I had to help them with their FAFSA, their financial report. I had to help them with their college applications. I had to help guide them through the process. I did this for 20 years. So I know from whence I speak. So The grades are the number one thing. Colleges understand that your ACT doesn't mean anything. Let me give you an example. All right.
Okay.
Let's say you get a 18 on your ACT. All right.
Sounds so good.
And you're at a mid-ranked high school. Whatever state you want to put it in, I don't care. In other words, your high school is an average high school. It's not a high-ranking high school. It's not a low-ranking high school. You get an 18, and that throws up a little red flag depending on your grades. If you've got a 3.0, then the college recruiter, the one looking over your app, is going to say, it's a mid-range school, not bad. They only got an 18 on the ACT, but they got a 3.0. So this kid's got to be able to be doing something. Can they get through the first year and a half, first 2 years of college, which is when you have to take your core courses? That's all they care about. Because you can get past your first 2 years of school, then you can finish your 4 years. Here's the deal. So if a kid doesn't retake the ACT and get a higher score, then here's the way to get around the ACT. You go to a junior college for your first 2 years. You take nothing but your core courses. That's your English, your math, your science, your history, your core courses. You get a high grade on it, and after 2 years of college at a junior college, the four-year college you're going to transfer to major in what you want to become, broadcaster, doctor, lawyer, candlestick maker. They don't care about your ACT. You took that 2 years ago. They don't care, and you don't have to take another ACT to get in.
Here's what they also don't care about, from what I understand, because we talked to a financial advisor. They don't care to give you a bunch of scholarship money.
Exactly. You've got to go find it on your own.
But here's the drawback. So if you go the two-year route and then go, because that is a popular route now, because college is insanely expensive.
Right. You go to a junior college, which is very inexpensive, and since you probably go to one around where you live, you're not spending money for housing, for food, and you can work.
You can save all sorts of money.
Right.
Take some classes, figure out what you want to do with your life so you know which school you really want to attend.
Exactly.
Those are all in the pros category. The cons that I'm told, depending on where you go, you're not necessarily going to be able to transfer all those credits. You could run into some roadblocks there.
But that's where you do your research ahead of time.
Well, but here's the thing, Roger.
Okay.
I mean, the reason I'm going there, partly maybe it's because of grades, maybe it's because of expense, maybe it's because I don't exactly know what I want to do with my life yet, so I'm going to take these general ed courses. But then in year two, if you figure out, here's the college for me, because this is what I want to do, so I want to go there, and then they say, that's fine, but out of the 20 credits you took, only 12 will transfer. You know, so you might not know, but you're right, you do your homework and try to figure it out the best you can. But the college advisor tells us that, so Jack has been offered a good package of incentives of scholarship money or whatever to Nebraska.
Right.
And we're trying to get more.
Okay.
But he's been offered a good package. But the guy told us if you go the 2 year route and then go, schools aren't going to offer you money.
Exactly.
You're going to pay.
I understand that, but you're only going to pay 2 years, not four.
Right. But Jack, so.
And then you go out and you find your own money. There's a ton of money out there.
But that doesn't mean you'll get it. There is a ton, but you'd rather. So Jack's been offered $13,000 from Nebraska.
Nice.
So $26,000 over 2 years.
Okay.
If we didn't get that and he went 2 years later,
it wouldn't be there.
It wouldn't be there.
Because he wasn't an incoming student.
Okay, so it might be kind of a break even on the whole thing.
I understand.
There's that too. And, you know, and listen, if you don't know what you want to do with your life, if you're not sure if the costs are, I think that there's a definitely good reasons to do the community college route for 2 years and then figure out and then go. I think that could definitely work for you. I think there's other kids that are just, the grades aren't quite there or the testing was bad, but they want to get into the school. This is really their school. It doesn't sound like, with Lori Loughlin's one daughter at least, she didn't even care to go there.
Right.
So that was definitely the parents. I could see maybe some of these cases are, this kid dreamed their whole life. Notre Dame. How many kids in the Midwest grow up nothing but Notre Dame? Notre Dame's freaking impossible to get into, right?
Right.
I mean, I have a good friend who I grew up with. Her brothers went to Notre Dame. So she was a legacy. She had great grades in high school. She couldn't get into freaking Notre Dame, and it crushed her. And if her parents were billionaires, they probably would have greased the skids a little bit to get their daughter into Notre Dame. Because sometimes it's, now, I don't think USC is that impossible to get into. I wouldn't think so. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's
a state school. It's not a private school.
Jess got denied from USC.
It was actually for grad school, so I had already had my bachelor's.
I can see grad school being a lot tougher because it's a much smaller.
Well, it's very limited. Yeah.
But I also applied for undergrad, too.
And got rejected? What was your ACT?
It was...
She's going to blow us both out of the water.
No, it wasn't great, but it wasn't terribly bad.
Was it over 20?
I think I had like 22, 21 maybe.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I don't even remember like what the score evaluation is on it. But I'm like, I've never been too great at testing, but I've always had very good grades. So my grades were always very high. And what I was applying for, and both like for my major in undergrad and grad, they were like, no.
Tell you what, it's 2:31 in the morning. Let's continue this. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Before we do that, let's check some news headlines. Here's Roger Badish.
Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. It's 2:37 in the morning, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's also the text line if you wanted to jump in there. Skycap Dan's checking in tonight. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin. All the oldies but goodies. Where's Truck and Phil tonight? Truck and Phil, are you out there? Give us a hello, sir. I need to know how many days it is till Christmas. Roger, you were just mentioning it's going to be breezy this weekend.
We could get wind gusts up to about 15 miles an hour at times.
So yesterday, what was yesterday?
Friday?
Two days ago,
okay.
On Thursday,
yep.
I was down at work at the studios down here at Black Dog, and then as I'm driving home, it was really crazy windy that afternoon.
Yeah.
That was our really nice day, actually. That was our gorgeous day.
It was.
During the day.
Yeah, and temperature got up to like 59.
Went 60. To hell in a handbasket. Yeah. We had volleyball games that
night.
Well,
wait a minute. No, hold on a second. Thursday?
Yes.
It eventually turned into a nice day, but you had to have those storms come through first. We had those
Thursday afternoon. We had big storms.
Yeah.
But then when I got home and picked up the kids from school, it was insanely gorgeous out.
Yes.
Like warm.
Yes.
When it wasn't raining, it was really, really warm.
Yes.
But it was also crazy windy and we had the rain, like you said. So I'm driving home. So we have the 2010 Honda Odyssey. We bought it used a couple of years ago to replace our old Honda Odyssey. God help me, I'm still in the minivan years.
And soccer dad.
So it has on the doors the two side the driver's door and the passenger the front door and the whatever the sliding rear door is. Okay. There's a decorative kind of panel that goes along the middle through all the doors. It's just like, you know, I don't even know what you describe it as. It's like a thin 2-inch piece of...
On the outside?
On the outside.
Yeah, it's like a strip.
Like a strip, yeah. So there's a strip that runs across. A couple weeks earlier, I noticed the front little, you know, that kind of snaps in various places, right?
Okay.
And the front, it was loose in the front. And I was like trying to pound it back in. Something must have broke on that. So it's just a little wobbly in the front there. When I got home and got out of the car, I get out and I look down and that strip on the back door... was bent straight out.
Oh my
the
God.
Wind had grabbed it and bent it back. So it was sticking straight out like a good foot out from the car.
Is it like a lighter material? Is it like
it's the same color?
No. Heavy metal?
It's not real heavy. It's a plastic, thick plastic.
All right.
And, you know, because the wind was catching that part that was probably flapping at the front and it was so windy out, it just grabbed it and ripped it right out of there. So I had to bend it back, and the other parts still snap back in, but now there's a huge bend mark in the paint, so I'm going to have to get that replaced eventually. But that's how windy it was that day. It was crazy.
Well, what's underneath it?
Holes.
Huh?
I mean, it's the door. It's just, you know, the door kind of curves in a little bit there.
Right.
So that these
But there's no open
there.
Gap, is there? Like,
well, there's open holes
where the
strip snaps in.
Oh, where it snaps. Okay.
You know,
but it's like
that.
The door is still there, the metal part.
Blow the door away, Roger.
Just double checking. I don't have a panel truck.
Yeah, it was crazy because, the whole door was gone. That would have been something.
Yeah. I think you would have felt that long before
probably,
you got home.
Probably would have heard something on that. Maybe would have heard that.
Did you see? I saw a picture. I don't know if it's real or not. It probably isn't. But there's this elevated train track somewhere out west, I think, or north. And all these rail cars got blown down onto the gully below the valley.
By wind?
Yeah.
Train train cars?
Well, because they're empty, so they're fairly light.
They'll still got to be pretty heavy, though.
Well, right? They're heavy metal, but they're it's very thin metal.
Well,
it's those
just,
train cars.
I guess just like any truck that's empty, like a semi truck that's empty, they'll warn during high winds.
Did you see the video of the truck that went flying?
No.
The semi truck is driving along on the highway, not a lot of people out because they must have put the warnings out, and all of a sudden it's a semi, so the back of the semi starts to get lifted up off the ground by the wind, and the whole truck eventually gets blown off to the side of the road, lifted up and blown over.
That's crazy. That's some wind.
Yeesh.
Well, it was nice to have that 60, almost 60 degrees for those couple of hours. So then we had volleyball that night. We get out of volleyball, and it must have dropped 30 degrees, and it was like misty, icy rain. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it switched back that fast.
Bomb cyclone winds blow freight train off railroad bridge in New Mexico.
Bomb cyclone winds? That's a description.
Well, you've never heard of the what happened in Denver. They said it was a bomb cyclone.
What is a bomb cyclone?
It's...
Is that like a sudden huge burst of wind that drops down like a bomb?
I'm not sure the exact. We'll have to get Tom Skilling to explain it. But it's like the perfect storm.
We're not allowed to call him anymore at this time of night, we've been told.
What, really?
Yeah.
Darn. State was hit with a rare 80 to 100 mile an hour wind gust Wednesday.
Whew. 80 to 100 mile an hour wind gust.
And all of these trains, it looks like it's in, no, that's the same spot. All of these train cars got blown over and smashed on the ground. This is a rare hurricane force wind gust blowing roofs off houses, overturning semi-trucks on rural highways, and sweeping a freight train off of a railroad bridge. 26 cars of a Union Pacific freight train as it crossed an elevated span over the Canadian River near the small town of Logan Wednesday afternoon. They fell 40 feet into a ravine.
Wow. Does anybody hurt?
Did
just cars go?
No injuries reported. They said it was tossed around like a model train set. And there's pictures here. And it looks like it.
Interesting.
And you know what? I think the picture is kind of cut off. There's two pictures. One of them's kind of cut off. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking the engine and maybe a couple of other cars, or
stayed
at least
on the tracks.
They stayed on. They had gotten all over the pass. They were now on regular solid ground.
Yeah,
part of the tracks. And
well, you'd assume the engine might be way heavy.
Yeah,
maybe that's not going to get over.
Wow.
Yeah.
It even looks like some of the track got pulled.
Hmm. Oh.
Because you know how how train car wheels are. They're on the inside of the tracks.
Yeah, so the one that
they
went
can
over
grip.
Might have kind of grabbed it with and pulled it.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of, have you noticed how bad the potholes are right now?
Horrible.
And I imagine we could have this conversation at this time every year.
Yeah.
But I've never noticed them quite like this.
No, they are. It seems like they grow overnight. Seriously.
I mean, there's like loose body potholes out here. Where Jess and I park down the street right here, there's one that's a good 3 feet wide, 4 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how deep it is, but I feel like you see them all the time right now. I know it's a time of year where weather's changing and use a lot of salt, but we must have used way more salt this year or just had much bigger variations in temperatures that cause these things, because it just seems like everywhere you go, There is just pothole craziness.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I know they've got construction up by me on Ridge Avenue in Chicago. There's a section that's just, it's like someone dropped bombs on the road. And it's blocked off now, and it's got one of those city construction project signs in front of it or something like that. And I think they're at least working on one side of the road. The other side got worked on last year. But it's got potholes in it now, too.
Everything has potholes in it. I mean, it's going to be an interesting spring, and there's going to be a lot of work out there for that, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But as I was driving into, you know, it's happy St. Patrick's Day weekend, of course.
Yeah.
And I forgot to wear my green tonight. But as I was driving in tonight, there was a roadblock as I was getting on the expressway, not where I was going, but but at an exit. I'd never seen that before out by my house, like 8 cop cars lined up waiting for people to get off the expressway. I guess they were doing, you know, an old fashioned
stop and search.
DUI check.
Could be.
I'm guessing. Yeah. And I imagine it's the weekend to do that.
Sure.
And I noticed here downtown just a lot more people out and about.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if a lot of people are in town for St. Patrick's Day weekend. I imagine that's right, because this morning we'll have the Dying
9 o'clock.
River and the,
mm-hmm.
the parade, right?
Yep.
So I imagine a ton of people. And even walking here tonight, like normally this street is dead when I walk in.
Mm-hmm.
There were 20, 30 people like coming into the hotel, walking around. I was like, wow, what is going on out here?
Yeah.
That's very unusual.
Yeah, it was more active. I also found it more active than usual for a Friday night. I get in obviously earlier than you do.
Sure.
I get in around 8:45, 9 o'clock. The cars, Uber Lyft cars,
mm-hmm.
who obviously have no clue where they are in this world. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you did.
Were pulling into the hotel and people were hailing him. They were stopping in the middle of the street, like maybe 90% more than they normally do at that time on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And there were groups of people crossing the street, as opposed to in the past, just a couple, like one or two here or there, nothing to worry about. But these were groups of people that decided to play games with the drivers. It's like, you know, the light is green for them to walk.
Yeah.
But then they stop at the corner and start talking and cheering and laughing and everything. And then one of them's watching you out of the corner of their eye as you're starting to turn left. And just as you're about ready to hit the crosswalk, all of a sudden someone says, "Come on, guys." And they right in front of you.
Yeah.
And go across the street.
That's always very frustrating. So if New Year's Eve is amateur night, is St. Patrick's weekend amateur weekend?
Especially
when it falls on a weekend like this?
Yeah, I think because of the drinking.
Yeah, it just seems like people are really into
it. And the partying, yeah.
I have, so out in Dundee, we have a lot of bars. And Jim, who I work with, a friend of his you went to high school with, that's a good guy, him and a group of couples,
mm-hmm.
they do a bar crawl. They make up T-shirts, and they got to hit all the bars. And
but they're walking. You walk at those things, right?
Yes. Okay. I'm not saying people are drinking a drink. I'm just saying people are getting stupid drunk.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting at 3 o'clock today.
In the morning?
No, in the afternoon, thank God.
I'm sorry.
But they're starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and trying to hit 6 or 7 different bars and checking them off their T-shirt as they go.
Oh, man. Come on.
And that's a...
How old are they?
Yeah. 40s?
That just makes me exhausted.
I know.
Thinking
it's
about
like,
it.
It's like, I'm all in on the idea of it. The execution of it, I don't think I really pull off too well anymore.
If I were to be drinking and join a pub crawl, is that what you call it?
Yes.
Bar crawl, pub crawl,
whatever.
Yeah, it would be pub obadish, and the crawl would be from my easy chair to the refrigerator and back. That's it.
Yeah.
And if you want to change things up, like, because you know different pubs have different types of beers that they special.
It is fun to do. Yeah.
Right. So my refrigerator would be stocked with about 7 different types of beers. And that's what I would, I think I'll try this stout now. I understand it's 1987. It's very rich and fruity. No. I'm being sarcastic.
I mean, I've done this before, like with fundraisers for baseball or gone on little pub crawls before. I think it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
But starting at 3 in the afternoon, I'd be done by 6 o'clock. I don't know, because their goal is not to be done at 6 o'clock. Their goal is 3 o'clock to, you know, probably 1 in the morning. That's too long of a time.
On Saturday.
Today, yeah.
Today, yeah.
I agree, but people do it.
People do it.
Even for Mardi Gras, too.
Yeah, Mardi Gras is another one that I'm sure is just crazy.
But that's that's not a weekend thing, is it, Mardi Gras? Well, if you're in New Orleans...
Mardi Gras is like 10 days.
A week,
or something.
Yeah, I guess.
It's whenever you're there.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I've become old and
well, I'm
cranky.
The same way. I mean, it's hard for me to really, when we used to go to these conferences and be there for 4 days,
mm-hmm.
at least 2 or 3 nights with clients or whoever, I'd go stay out really late and then have to get up and go the next day. And this year we went out just on the final night and did stay out pretty late, but nowhere near what we've done in the past, that's mm-hmm. for sure. I get too tired too fast anymore. And now, like I used to, I'll drink beer all night or mm-hmm. do shots or do beer. Ah. Now I've got to have like vodka and Red Bull to like keep going.
Honestly, to stay awake?
Yes. When it's the middle of the night like that,
Wow.
That helps quite a bit.
Mm.
It's not like the old days.
And I never really partied when I was young. I honest to goodness, I just never got into it. Give me a club soda. I'm fine.
Yeah. I did more than that. 630 says, 1 year when my son was at college and St. Patrick's was on a weekend, they started drinking at dawn. The carousing made national news.
Yikes.
Oy, oy, oy.
Well, I will tell you, and I wasn't at the school for this.
I mean, at least you could take a nap at some point then.
Well, when you pass out, you're usually taking
a nap. Well, there's that.
Yeah. But this was way after I graduated. I'm not sure who works here who was at SIU at the time. Mm-hmm. But SIU eventually became notorious for its Halloween party.
Well, wasn't SIU ranked by Playboy?
In 1968.
Wow.
As the number one party school in America. I remember that. I got there 2 years later after they had the war riots, anti-war riots, and was the only college in America that got shut down early. Yeah. And, but many years later, over a decade later, it became notorious for this huge Halloween drinking extravaganza where they actually had to shut the school down again and eventually ordered the bars closed. They shut down the school. All you kids leave our town.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that bad that they closed down school?
Exactly. They said, the city fathers and mothers said, we don't want you in our town over Halloween. We don't want you tearing up our town. We don't care how much money we're going to lose. Get out of town. And I think it was like that for over a decade. And I think just recently they have.
So they started doing basically a fall break over Halloween?
I think it was I think it was St. Patrick's Day, New Year's Eve, and Mardi Gras all rolled up into one. That's how bad it got.
312-981-7200. We got to take a quick break. More to come. 720 WGN. Matt Pabala here with you on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for staying up late with us. Thanks for getting up early and tuning us in. 312-981-7200. It's the Matt Pabala Show live from the Allstate Skyline Studio here on 720 WGN. Roger, did you say the wind chill's around 22 degrees outside?
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Better than 22 below.
There's that.
Thank you. The glass is half full.
There it is.
In fact, if you put more water in it, it'll be full.
Even fuller.
Thank you.
I'm going to read from a couple of stories about this college scam.
Okay.
Because it is fascinating how they did this. The guy that's been the leader, this William Rick Singer.
Mm-hmm. The guy who was cutting all the deals.
The guy that was cutting the deals and working it out.
Mm-hmm.
He made $25 million doing this.
That's a tidy sum.
It's a pretty good day at the office right there. $25 million
over how long? How many years?
It doesn't say. At least I haven't run upon that. I'm guessing for about a decade, but I'm not sure.
Still $2.5 million a year.
Oh, hey, he's making bank.
Yeah.
Now, will he have any of it in the end? Is the question. Now,
did he report any of it either?
Well, there's that. Well, no, that's the other problem, right? He started a charity, and that's how a lot of these celebrities and CEOs are really in trouble is for tax fraud.
Yeah.
Because they were making a donation
mm-hmm.
to a charity, and that was all fraud.
Yeah.
I'm going to read to you a little bit of this from CNN.com. Details of the investigation, first reported by the Wall Street Journal, bring into focus the effort by law enforcement to collect evidence against Singer, who made $25 million by running a scheme in which he bribed coaches and university administrators to designate the students as recruited athletes and also fixed SAT and ACT scores. I created a side door, Singer said in federal court on Tuesday as he pleaded guilty to four counts related to the multi-million dollar scam and admitted the case against him was accurate. So that was what made it so attractive to so many families is I created a guarantee. Investigators followed the transfers of money, eventually landed on Singer, the law enforcement official told CNN. Singer, knowing he was caught and facing a mountain of evidence, agreed to work with investigators back in September. Assistant U.S. Attorney Eric Rosen said Tuesday. Singer was instructed to continue meeting with parents, this time wearing a wire, and to follow through on agreements he was already working on, the official said. Investigators knew this was the busy season for Singer. Students were declaring schools and taking the standardized tests. Parents were also looking to guarantee their children's entrance into schools. Singer admitted during his hearing that he told the father of one prospective candidate that he was wearing a wire and that he shouldn't say anything illegal. So at least he was nice to some of the people. You haven't done anything wrong yet, so please don't say anything that would be harmful to you guys because you haven't done anything which was absolutely illegal, Singer said. I wonder if he did this while he was wearing a wire, so the guys in the van are going, dude, stop it! You know, they're like, come on, you're wearing the wire. We hear you. Don't tell the guy. Prosecutor said in court that Singer had warned several clients that if they received a call from him, it would most likely be recorded. Singer had obstructed justice with at least six families who had either taken part in the scam or were planning to do it, prosecutor said. Both Huffman and Laughlin, so that's Felicity Huffman and Lori Laughlin, have made their initial court appearances, were released after posting bond. They will appear separately before a judge in Boston on March 29th. Meredith, the former Yale soccer coach, this is the guy that was really the one who got wrapped up in this, is expected to go before a judge on March 28th. He has not yet entered a plea. Okay, and then I have this other story. This is about the Meredith guy who was the Yale soccer coach. This is very interesting from the New York Times. Because you think, well, how much money could these coaches have really been? Are they doing this for a couple thousand dollars? Rudy Meredith was a soccer coach at Yale for a long time. A very, like, award-winning soccer coach. A New York Times article gets into, like, his past and stuff like this. At the heart of the scandal was consultant William Singer, took $25 million. But the person who led federal authorities to Mr. Singer, according to court papers filed on Tuesday, was Mr. Meredith. In a Boston hotel on April 12, 2018, Mr. Meredith solicited, listen to this, so the soccer coach from Yale, women's soccer coach, Raj.
Yeah,
Boston hotel, April 12, 2018, Mr. Meredith solicited a bribe from the parent of a prospective college student in exchange for saving a Yale soccer recruitment spot for his daughter. How much did he ask for? What did he solicit from him?
For a soccer spot?
For a female soccer spot, saving a soccer recruitment spot for his daughter.
In Yale.
And it's recruitment. It's not like they're going to get a scholarship, because that was the key
right.
to this.
Right.
Is they didn't necessarily give a scholarship, I think. It
right.
was more like, we'll get you into the school because I'm recruiting you.
Right.
So what's he asking the parent to pay
at Yale?
For Yale.
I'd say $2.5 million.
Oh, my gosh. For one kid to go to school?
At Yale?
Okay.
Who probably doesn't play soccer?
Okay. I didn't. I
don't
know. I thought
you
were going to say just, like $4,000 or $5,000, and I was going to be able to say, ha! $450,000.
I think I was closer to that than your $4,000.
You were. Mr. Meredith solicited a $450,000 bribe from the parent Jeez. Of a prospective college student in exchange for saving a Yale recruitment spot for his daughter. He took $2,000 from the parent and directed the parent to wire future payments to a bank account in Connecticut. But the FBI was secretly recording the conversation, the charging document said. Then 6 days later, the parent, who was working with the authorities, wired $4,000 to Mr. Meredith from a bank account in Boston that the FBI controlled, now giving the government evidence of wire fraud. With the authorities on to Mr. Meredith, he told them about a deal he had struck in November 2017 when Mr. Singer had introduced him to a man who wanted his daughter to attend Yale. Mr. Singer helped doctor the application to make it seem as though she was the co-captain of a prominent soccer club in Southern California, even though she did not play at that level, according to the government documents. But Mr. Meredith told the admissions office he wanted to recruit her, and after she was admitted, Mr. Singer paid the coach $400,000.
Jeez.
These parents really want their kids into Yale. Holy cow.
All right, don't get me started.
Late Friday, Yale released a statement in which it said one student involved in the scheme was admitted and is attending now, while the other was denied admission. In the statement, Peter Salovey, the university president, called the criminal actions, quote, an affront to our community's deeply held values of fairness, inclusion, and honesty. Mr. Salovey said the university was starting an internal investigation into its admissions process. Prosecutors said on Tuesday that Mr. Meredith had agreed to plead guilty to wire fraud, honest services wire fraud, and conspiracy to commit honest services wire fraud. He did not respond for comment. It was a dramatic fall for a man. And so this is interesting to hear his background. It's a dramatic fall for a man considered to be a Yale institution. Mr. Meredith started as an assistant coach in 1992, rose to head coach in 1995, and led the team to its first unshared Ivy League title in 2005. The charges blindsided virtually everyone who knew Mr. Meredith, according to interviews with more than a dozen former players and others connected to Yale or soccer. Mr. Meredith was generous and well-liked, did not appear to have any health, financial, or personal problems. He grew up modestly in Rockville, Maryland area, was an all-state soccer player, yada, yada, yada. He had a lot of credibility because he was a very good player in his own right, according to somebody who worked with him on national soccer teams. Yale enjoyed success in the mid-2000s, with the 2005 team reaching the third round of the NCAA tournament, knocking out third-seeded Duke in the process. Mr. Meredith coached several Ivy League players of the year and an All-American second-teamer who was profiled by ESPN. Meredith Speck, class of 2015, was the first Yale player in the National Women's Soccer League, according to Yale's Alumni Magazine. The thing I remember is how professionally he treated us, said Theron Gibbons, who was a member of Meredith's first recruiting class in 96 and now ranks third on Yale's scoring list. Refs were calling me babe, and Rudy was never like that. We were athletes. He was very respectful, very sensitive. If anything, Ms. Gibbons said, Mr. Meredith sometimes seemed intimidated by the aura of Yale and tried hard to be liked. Quote, he's not sophisticated by any means, and I know he would defer to people who he thought were smarter. He's very trusting and gullible for sure. She added, I'm not condoning what is alleged, but he's family, and you stand by family. His wife, Eva Bergsten Meredith, is also a familiar presence at Yale soccer events. Former national team player for Sweden, she's the longtime women's coach at Wesleyan and has also run with her husband Bulldog Cardinal Soccer Camp for many years. In 2013, in what former players said was an unusual move, the Yale women's coaching position itself was endowed in Mr. Meredith's name thanks to an anonymous donation. For a time, Rudy Meredith was the Rudolph L. Meredith head coach of women's soccer. Even after his resignation in November, the name stuck. When Brendan Flaherty was hired as his replacement the next month, it was the Loring family and Rudolph L. Meredith head coach of women's soccer. Now, Mr. Flaherty is listed on Yale's website simply as the Loring family coach. It was not immediately clear when or why Yale made the change. University spokesman said Mr. Meredith was not involved in funding and naming the position. In recent years, Yale's teams did not perform as well as they had in the 2000s, and players and friends began to suspect that Mr. Meredith was no longer as gung-ho about soccer. Adelaide Jackson Gibson, a Yale goalkeeper who graduated in 2013 is now a freelance writer in Brooklyn, said she could feel people become more defeated over time and added people seem tired and a little bit checked out. Some players, speaking on condition of anonymity so as not to be ensnared in the investigation, also began to notice a player or two every couple of years who did not belong on a Division I team based on their skill level. Some of those players came from wealthy families, prompting speculation that their parents had donated in exchange for coveted recruiting spots. In August of 2017, the Merediths purchased a vacation home in Fernandina Beach, Florida for $125,000 and took out a construction loan for $350,000+. The next month, Mr. Meredith was badly shaken, friends say, by the unexpected death of Fritz Rodriguez, a longtime assistant coach who had been Mr. Meredith's roommate and teammate in college. So his resignation in November 2018 did not come as a complete surprise to some. What few knew, of course, was that he had been cooperating with federal authorities for roughly half a year. A Yale spokesman said the university learned about the scheme and the federal investigation only after the announcement that he was leaving. It's pretty fascinating. $400,000 bribe he gets to recruit a player.
Jeez.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a lot of money, Raj. There's no way around it.
I know that's a lot of money, and I know money makes people do stupid things.
Yes, it does.
But to do something you know is wrong, even for a ton of money, what process does your brain go through or not go through to do that? You're looking over your shoulder every minute of every day.
Yeah, you
just
wonder.
Waiting for the trap to snap shut. Seriously. That's a horrible way to live your life. Unless you are completely devoid of any
any propriety,
well,
any maybe, honesty.
Well, I think
any values.
Hold on.
No, it's just I hate to be on my high horse, but what is wrong with human? I know we're not perfect people. I know we're not. But still, it's a very simple thing to think about. If you're breaking the law, it's going to catch up to you. It's like going to Vegas. You only bring as much money as you can afford to lose because the odds are always against you.
Do you ever wonder, because I sometimes wonder this. Like you're saying, listen, if you do this, it's going to catch up with you. It's going to happen.
Yes.
And does it always catch up with people? Are there people that are retired and old and are like, man, I got away? I always wonder, you know, you talk about in Chicago all these murders every year.
Right.
A huge percentage of them go unsolved.
I know
that. A surprisingly large percentage.
I know.
So I wonder if in other realms of life where people are committing crimes like this or stock frauds or whatever, maybe if you keep doing it over and over and over again, yes, you're eventually going to get caught. Maybe that's how most criminals get caught, is because he keeps taking these bribes. Singer keeps running the scam. They don't do it and then get out. But you wonder sometimes, like, are there people that are like, God, I've been doing this my whole life. I've never been caught. I just wonder sometimes, like, are there people running scams left and right and nobody's the wiser?
Sure, I'm sure they are. Because we are human.
So maybe he's not looking over his shoulder the whole time.
But
maybe
I think they are. Deep down inside, I think they have trouble sleeping.
I wonder.
I honestly think they have trouble sleeping.
I think when he was having trouble sleeping, he would count to 400,000.
Oh, shut up. 400,000, and then wondering how much he needs to put away to pay for his lawyer.
Well, hopefully,
or post bond.
Hopefully,
how much did she post? $1 million?
That's what I don't get, and I haven't read the story about that. How come Felicity Huffman had a $250,000 bond, but Lori Loughlin got $1 million?
Because she was charged. It was 10% of $10 million. She was the charges were $10 million against her.
What do you mean? So the charges are $10 million. Her bond was set at $1 million, so she had to provide $100,000.
Right.
Felicity Huffman's bond was set at $250,000.
So that $25,000.
Right. But what I'm saying is, why was Lori Loughlin's bond set at $1 million and Felicity Huffman's at $250,000?
The severity of it. It's based on the severity, the amount, the number of laws broken. Who is it, Lori?
More luck.
Are you saying she's the one who got...
She's the Hallmark Channel one. I don't know why she got such a huge bond. Did she commit a bunch more crimes? I don't believe she did. Well, I mean, I haven't read enough to know, but...
Yeah, Loughlin.
I was wondering if, because her husband is a designer and probably has dual citizenship, is she more of a flight risk or something?
May initially have a referral. Let's see.
All right, you look that up while I take this call.
Yeah, go ahead. All right.
312-981-7200. We're getting Frank on the line here. Jess, can you put him on? Go ahead and throw Frank on. Let's get chatting with him. Hey, Frank, it's Matt. You're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm headed in the house after a short night with Uber. But I wanted to answer my man's question. Don't these people know that what they're doing is wrong? And my answer to you is this. You will answer for everything that you have done at some point in your life. It may not catch up with you now. It may not be 10 years from now. But at some point, if the law doesn't get them, karma will.
You think?
I can guarantee you that. I've seen it too many times here in Chicago.
Okay, so on a serious crime, on hurting somebody or really doing something, then I would be worried about that, right? But if you bribe somebody to get your kid into college, are you really going to feel like this is going to catch up with me at some point? You know what I mean?
Well,
I don't think you'd be worried about that.
Apparently, Matt, the people that are caught up in this scandal now, they're feeling it.
Well,
or they're going to
feel it. I imagine you're right. They are. You're absolutely right. When Felicity
and
Huffman,
that's a prime example of what we're talking about.
Yeah, when Felicity Huffman answered the door at 6 in the morning, there were FBI agents with their guns drawn. I'm sure she was like, holy crap. That was not what I expected.
I'm sure she was.
Yeah.
And Lori Loughlin, too.
Well, what I don't understand is, you got that much money. Why aren't you going directly to the school and saying, hey, I'd really like my kid to come here? What do I need to donate to assure that that happens? I would think they would have worked with her. Why are you going through a middleman and taking an illegal risk?
Ignorant.
Yeah,
I guess. Best answer I can give you, man. She was very ignorant of the process and ignorant of the law. But unfortunately, a judge will not excuse the fact that she was ignorant
of
the law and what she should have been or should not have been doing. Everyone involved is going to incur some sort of penalty.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do any jail time, though. And they're not going to. Well, I feel bad for Lori Loughlin. I mean, she's losing Hallmark Channel, cut her now, and you know, she had a good career going with them, making those
movies. She's off that show.
Fuller House. Netflix is cutting her from Fuller House.
Yeah.
And her penalty is loss of revenue and loss of income.
Yeah.
Her career could very well be destroyed because of this incident.
Absolutely.
So, like I said, if it's not the law, she'll pay for it in other ways.
And now her daughters have both dropped out of USC. So not only this, but she spent all that money, and now they're not even going there anymore.
Yeah.
And she will not recover any of that revenue that she gave to that institution.
Well,
So this
I'm
has turned
sure
out to be bad
all
the way around. Of course not. That money's gone.
Well, Hallmark cut her, but maybe her and Felicity Huffman could do a movie for Lifetime, because I think they'd like this.
Jeez.
Man, who's going to give them funding unless they can support the project themselves? But then again, with the money that they have to give up to get out of jail, I wonder, do they have anything left?
They're going to. They do. I guarantee it. And they're going to get that money back, because that's just bond. So they'll get that back by appearing in court. And I will tell you what, they will both work again. I do believe that. This isn't that heinous of a crime. This isn't.
No, it's not.
I mean, if you think about the celebrities in our lives and what we've watched the last month with musicians and things like that everything else, this is minor stuff compared to that. This is parents being really overzealous and stupid about trying to get their kids ahead. This is helicopter parenting at its worst. And
this is not what that other guy did.
No, it's not.
or it's allegedly
not.
Did.
No.
It's not that deal.
It's not either
and by
of
way,
it's
that
not either
of
those
two. By the way, that guy's career is done too, Matt.
Well,
that guy's career is done.
You'd like to hope so, but don't forget, he was acquitted on these charges 10 years ago, and he didn't have a lot of a career, but he was still making music and making money, right? So, you never know.
Spending money.
But in this case, Sony dropped him, so I don't know. He's going to have to independently distribute.
Well,
but
here's the thing.
If you get on television and tell a reporter or a journalist that for 30 years you haven't managed your money, that really doesn't say very much for for you managing your business affairs.
Well, no, it absolutely doesn't.
I would find it hard for this gentleman to be able to independently distribute his own music when you haven't managed your own finances, so you say, for over 30 years.
Well, there's a couple.
That was very interesting.
A couple of things interesting about that, Frank. You know, he was dropped by his record label, which would be really important if he didn't already have a name, right? Because you need that distribution. Now, if you're Britney Spears who's the most famous female singer right now? Taylor Swift. Say you're Taylor Swift. You could independently distribute everything because you've already made it and you've got this name. But it will be interesting to see if, like, Apple and Spotify and the big music distributors digitally, what if they refuse to carry R. Kelly anymore? That would really kill him.
That's the thing.
And then he's down to just...
Because you need that exposure.
He does. And he needs that continuous revenue of people downloading the songs, buying the songs. And then his only other option, I would say, is still touring. And he might be able to still tour in certain countries where this doesn't look as heinous as it does here in the States.
Well, he's not being allowed to leave the country now.
Well, not now.
Until the court case is over.
And
they took his passport, Roger. He's done. He can't go anywhere.
He might end up in jail, but if he gets acquitted somehow, if he doesn't face time for this, how will he come back? I don't think he'll ever come back here in the States, but I wonder if overseas he could still come back. I don't know.
That's questionable. It really is. But one thing I will say, you all are right on the money when you say that it's a bad idea to do something that you know is illegal and you have to look over your shoulder every 5 minutes because you don't know who might be coming to get you.
Yeah.
If you have
a
conscience.
That's a really bad move.
Yeah. If you have a conscience, you've got to know that it's wrong, and you don't do it in the first place. But, you know, not everyone's got a conscience, unfortunately.
Are you really? See, I'm not going to throw the conscience thing on this crime, guys. I'm not. This is not. This is not.
I think you have to.
Somebody else. This is not. This, listen, you shouldn't be doing this. Of course, you shouldn't
and
be doing
then,
this. People do much. What is
I
the
know they do worse, but
this,
the thing is the that it's wrong.
Of course, it's wrong. But what's the difference between this or donating $1 million to Yale so your kid gets in? Is it much different?
It's the same thing. You are jamming the system. And if you had a conscience, I'll go back to what I said before. If you have faith in the kid, then the kid will go where they want to go and get into where they want to get in and let the kids be successful on their own instead
of
always looking to mom and dad.
But we all know that there are things that help you out in life, and Yale is a network of places and people that will help them throughout their lives. And if you could have an opportunity to get your kid into Yale, then a lot of people would take that and want to give their kids that head start in life.
There's all kinds of people in the
world.
Parent,
yeah, you want the best for your baby. You really do.
I understand.
But I mean, listen, Roger.
In this case, they may face consequences that could alter not only their futures, but the future of the children.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
And that's
especially
something
like,
to be concerned about.
Lori Loughlin's daughter had this career as an influencer, and she might lose that whole career now. I mean, that might be ruined for her.
Yeah.
She had a good thing going. She didn't really need to be in school.
She already lost the contract with, what is it, Sephora?
Sephora.
I've never heard of that.
Sephora, which is huge in the makeup world.
Yeah. Oh, really?
For the ladies.
Oh.
Yes,
okay.
Right.
For the ladies.
My wife has some of that stuff in the house right now.
There you go.
And, yeah, and this could be detrimental for her.
Frank, thank you so much for checking in. We really appreciate it, buddy. Have a great night.
You all, too. I'll be listening until I fall asleep, guys.
Sounds good.
All right,
we appreciate it. Thanks, buddy. Have a good weekend.
By the way, you asked me about why one had to pay more than the other. So Laughlin is accused of paying $500,000 in bribes for the two daughters as recruits, even though they didn't participate in that crew team.
Right.
Huffman is accused of paying $15,000 to a fake charity to facilitate the cheating on the SAT.
Okay.
So there's a dollar amount and then the type of the crime that you did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't know there was that big of a gap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big gap.
Well, you're dealing, one had two daughters and one only one. Laughlin had two daughters.
But Felicity Huffman,
and then Huffman,
$250,000 versus $15,000, that's quite a difference.
Yeah.
But I want to say that Huffman's, I think the charge isn't, their daughter wasn't getting in as a recruit for, maybe she was.
No, they were.
It was more about cheating on the test.
On the test, right, yeah. right.
Man, going to be interesting. All right, we got to check the news, and then our friend Robert Bartholomew in New Zealand. We'll talk to him after we do this. Let me take a quick break, Roger, and then we'll get to your news next. 720 WGN. 3:42 in the morning. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. The Prime Minister of New Zealand called it the darkest day in New Zealand's history. Our friend Robert Bartholomew, who you remember, he's been on the show many times with us, mostly talking about mass hysteria in relation to what happened in Cuba with the alleged sonic attacks. But he's a professor out there, and we thought it would be a good time to check in with him out there in New Zealand. Good morning, Robert. How are you, sir?
Well, most of New Zealand is still in shock here, I can tell you that. It just goes to show there's no place to hide from this stuff.
Well, you know, it's interesting because whenever we have an incident like this here, a mass shooting, we'll talk about all the other countries in the world that have that this never happens at. In fact, we often say it never happens anywhere else but here. And this is one of the rare times a mass shooting has happened in another country. Your prime minister there said our gun laws will change. But it's interesting, what are the gun laws of New Zealand? How many people own guns? Is gun ownership common there?
I think it's about 1 in 3 that own guns, and they have them for hunting primarily. But the thing is, I was in Australia a number of years ago in the late 90s when they had the Martin Bryant case in Tasmania. You had a mass shooting there of 30-some-odd people were killed. And then after that, they clamped down on guns. They had a buyback program, and they made it so you couldn't get an automatic gun. And, you know, I think that's what they're going to look at here. I don't know why anybody needs, you know, automatic guns or what are almost literally machine guns. I think that would help to mitigate the problem. But, I think it's time to stop mincing words. It's time to start giving more than condolences and sympathies. It's time to take some type of concrete action, whether it's in New Zealand or whether it's in the United States. And I do think, and your listeners might not like what I have to say, but I think the Trump administration has consistently failed to call out white supremacists from Charlottesville and elsewhere. What do you think is going to happen? And it's not surprising that this guy here in New Zealand, I won't mention his name, referred to Muslim immigrants as invaders in his manifesto. Those are very similar to words to what Donald Trump was using to drum up fear and foster hatred in the United States. And what really makes me sad as an American living in New Zealand is that my great-great-grandfather was a congressman, and he was a Republican. I see so many Republicans staying silent on this issue, whether it's Charlottesville or other issues related to things like white supremacy. And I just think it's time to speak up and not be afraid of the consequences. You know, it shouldn't matter what party you're in or what the party says. Right is right, wrong is wrong, and this stuff is wrong. I mean, white supremacy, scientifically, does not have a basis. All humans come from a single species, Homo sapiens. We share a common genetic heritage. And outside of our outer superficial trappings, our DNA is 99% identical. That is an established scientific fact. It should be part of every school curriculum.
Well, I mean, you're speaking about things that make sense, Robert, when we're talking about people who don't believe in things that make sense. I'm not referring to the Trump administration. That's a whole other topic we could certainly get into. But when you're talking about people who are white supremacists, they're not going to care what your science is behind any of this, right? They're off in their own little world on these things. So I understand absolutely what you're saying, and the world needs to do it. You know, we had the Tree of Life synagogue shooting here last year, and we have this attack. I mean, we have attacks all the time that are more random, but this one very specific, the Tree of Life one here in Pittsburgh, very specific because of their faith. And it is concerning because we've gotten to a point in America and maybe the world where we talk a lot about nationalism and speak very harshly about immigration. And so there is a lot of that fervor in the air. And I have no idea. I imagine we don't have any idea right now what the last couple of years of American politics, how that affected this person or not. But I think we can all agree that there has been a lot in the air in the last couple of years. Specifically speaking about what happened here, Robert, I'm reading from a story that said he carried out the killings with two semi-automatic weapons, two shotguns, and a lever-action firearm, which I have no idea what that means. But he didn't have the sounds like something as like the AK-47 here, which is a very fast, or the, we're not reading about bump stocks like we did in the shootings in Las Vegas from a couple of years ago. And so it's interesting. You were saying that you think they'll look into changing the gun laws. So are you saying that they shouldn't even be, or what they might look at is because automatic weapons, I believe, are banned here in the U.S. Semi-automatic is as close as you get, which is still very quick. So they should be even, you think they might look into a level below that so they can have firearms in the country, but they're not ones that could produce mass casualties very quickly like he was able to do here?
Yeah, in Australia, I remember they crimped guns and they modified them. So you can only fire once or twice, and then it was, you know, then you have to reload, and it takes time. And in that time, people can get away. I what we're really looking at here is a moral panic about Muslims and foreigners and migrants and asylum seekers. These are periods of exaggerated fear of outsiders who are wrongly viewed as a threat to our way of life, and they they become scapegoats for society's problems. And this guy certainly had very, he was certainly a very angry person. And the problem is today, you can really reinforce any belief that you have, as far out as it may be, by searching on the internet and finding like-minded individuals, and it gives you a false sense of reality. You know, the reality is that migrants are less likely to commit crimes. That's true in the United States.
Yes.
Many take lower-paying jobs because no one wants them. They pay taxes, which lowers the overall tax burden. And certainly, in the United States and in most countries around the world, most acts of terrorism on American soil are homegrown. And, you know, that's the reality, but the perception is very different. And, you know, the Internet has so much stuff on there that's just not true. And, you know, we live in this age of so-called fake news, and people are sometimes at a loss to know what to believe.
Well, absolutely, and social media has played a big role in that, and there was a very weird twist in this, that this person actually started live broadcasting on social media, I believe on Facebook, the attack as he started it, and so I'm reading that New Zealand has gotten that pulled down, that the judge has ordered that there's cameras in the courtroom, but that the defendant, the accused, his face must be blurred out if they show pictures or video from the courtroom. You yourself said you're not going to say his name. I haven't said his name either. His name is in the story I read. It's interesting. I believe some countries have laws about not saying somebody's name in a case like this. The U.S. certainly does not. Do you think that should be something that we should do, Robert, in a case like this? Blur out the picture. Don't reveal his name. Don't give them what they were looking for.
You know, it doesn't make much difference to me at this point. It's, you know, the deed has been done. And there's no death penalty here in New Zealand. I think right now, if for some reason they were to bring it back for this case, I think, you know, if it's possible, that, but there is no death penalty in this country. And in Australia, when they had that terrible shooting in the late 90s, there was no death penalty there. The person is still in prison after killing 30-some-odd people. And it's just, it's so frustrating because history, if it doesn't repeat itself, it rhymes, and it keeps happening over and over again. And what are we doing other than saying, oh, this is terrible? What concrete actions are we taking to try to stop this from happening? And there's such a warped perception out there when it comes to reality. The threat is real for Muslims. I mean, there are Muslims out there who are terrorists, but it's wildly exaggerated. I was looking at the statistics for last year. Each year, about 20 people in the United States are killed by cows. Dozens die in accidents involving lawnmowers. And last year, just over 5,000 people choked to death. You know, there is more of a threat to the average American from a chicken sandwich than there is from a terrorist and a Muslim terrorist. You know, it is just not part of the reality. But people have this warped sense of reality, and it gets reinforced by a lot of stuff that's out there on social media. And it's very frustrating.
Well, that's interesting, Robert, because then the gun lobby would say, more people die from a chicken sandwich than die in mass shootings. We don't need to change these gun laws. These are deranged people. We have laws on the books that need to be enforced. There's always, you know, something to combat the call for changing the gun laws. What do you think of that?
Well, are these people deranged people, or are they just evil? You know, does this guy is he insane, or is he just angry and has a certain perception of the world? And they're saying tonight that, you know, I heard some earlier stories saying that this guy was Australian, which is apparently true, mm-hmm. and he came over here to do this, but apparently he's been living in this country for many years. And, you know, are they going to try to claim insanity? When a lot of these acts are just evil, and it's some kind of conformity to a small group norm. I mean, you go and look at the Nazis. And I always tell my students over here, you give me a 6-month-old baby, and I'll give you an A student and an upstanding citizen, or the best little Nazi you ever saw, because we are products of our environment. Mm-hmm. And in this case, a lot of these shootings that are happening, people are getting radicalized online and by involving themselves in these very small niche groups that give a warped perception of reality. And, you know, I think we have to really examine what's going on here online and have to do something to mitigate this in terms of why do we have to have guns that can fire more than, you know, a couple of bullets at once before you reload? I don't know why that's necessary. And I know a couple of times ago when we were talking about the sonic attack stuff, one of the lead-ins was about the militia in the United States and about the, you know, how we ended up getting guns and stuff like this. You know, I just don't see the necessity of this.
Well, and I agree with you, and I think a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people who advocate for stronger gun control, and I agree. I don't, you know, I think my guess, and I'm no, you know, constitutional scholar, but, you know, guns are around to protect yourself from the government or from your home, but either way, you're not going to protect yourself from the government. It's too big. It's too strong. I don't believe we need to be armed for an uprising, and you certainly don't need an AK-47 to protect your home. So I think there's a lot we could do to protect the Second Amendment and still protect people from people having the ability to produce mass casualties in a small amount of time like they can now. But
yep. And you know, we always seem to have these scares. It's probably the biggest reason why I wrote the book American Intolerance, which looks at the demonization of immigrants in the United States and the history of that, which came out last year. It's widely believed that throughout much of American history, the U.S. has been very tolerant and welcoming of migrants, foreigners, refugees, asylum seekers, and that the current period now is an anomaly. But that's not true. Most of American history has been characterized by short periods of tolerance interspersed by lengthy periods of intolerance against Muslims, Jews, Catholics,
Irish,
the Japanese, the Chinese,
Italians,
the Germans, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
It always seems like we're in some type of moral panic against some evildoer.
Robert, can you hold on? We got to take a quick break for the news, but can you talk to us a little bit more?
Sure.
Excellent. I appreciate that. Hold on 1 second. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Matt Bubal here with you on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in Chicago. Our friend Robert Bartholomew, the author of the book, the co-author of the book, American Intolerance, Our Darkest History, American Intolerance, Our Dark History of Demonizing Immigrants, is on the phone with us. He lives in New Zealand. He's a professor there. He's been on the air with us many times over the years, talking mostly about his writings about mass hysteria. Robert, thank you so much for holding on through the break. I appreciate it. So as you can imagine, as you mentioned at the front, when you started criticizing the Trump administration, then really talking about stricter gun control, you said a lot of your listeners may not agree with this. And they all are not, according to our text screen. But I want to read you three texts from people that have written in, and then get your reaction to it, because it's, you know, these are the arguments you get from the other side. So 309 wrote, "It's also wildly exaggerated that every white person is a racist. This is all about hate. Everybody hates everybody for some reason. People have been killing people since long before guns existed. They will continue to do it if or when guns are ever removed from society. Why do we have cars that drive faster than the speed limit?" And then the next one, "Making stricter gun laws isn't going to change the thing. People want to do something like this and harm people. They will find a way. If they don't have guns to hurt people in the mass quantity, then they'll just build a bomb or do something else. There's no getting around it. If they want to do it, they will do it. Don't punish the law-abiding citizens that don't do anything wrong with their rifles and other guns just because there are sick people who want to harm people." Another writes, "Hitler banned guns so Jews couldn't fight back. How did that work out? He just said we have to know our history." So those are the kinds of things that people People are very, very scared of limiting our ability to purchase and own guns. I don't understand it. You know, for 8 years we heard Barack Obama is coming for your guns, and we have more guns than ever. So I've never understood people's fear that if we limit guns, if we do better background checks, if we have longer waiting periods, that people will not be able to own guns. I guess the belief is that it's a slippery slope, and then somehow we'll end up without guns, which we hold so preciously dear here in this country. But those are the types of comments you get back. What do you think about that, Robert?
Well, look, these sound like sincere, honest, well-intending people. My comeback to that would be, first of all, background checks. People can steal guns. You can get them on the black market. So I'm not a big believer in background checks. But being against guns, I'm not against guns. You have the right to bear arms. Have a gun. But I don't think that we should, there should be a limit on the types of guns that you have and how many bullets you can fire within a certain amount of time. And I certainly don't think in the year 2019 that even a semi-automatic weapon is going to help you if the military is coming for you, because the military is us. They are we. And it's so much more of a threat to people in society in general. So I'm not against the owning of guns, but I don't think we need to have guns that are fire so many bullets in such a short period of time. Now, that's not necessarily what happened here in New Zealand, but I mean, some of these weapons, I mean, he was firing off the guy in Las Vegas. I mean, why haven't they banned those bum stocks by now?
Well,
To me, that's incomprehensible.
I thought we did take care of the bump stocks. I thought something happened with that. Roger, could you look that up, where we're at with the bump stocks in America?
Because yeah.
I thought that did happen.
There was something in Congress, but I don't think it was very wide sweeping. I think a lot of states are taking action, but I'll look it up for you.
Double check that for us. Thank you. And Robert, but that's what's going to happen here, though, is because this wasn't an AK-47. This isn't a bump stock situation. Gun rights activists are going to say, look, he didn't have those things that you want to ban. He still was able to pull this off. And there will continue to be the argument that, it's the people kill people, not guns argument, that they'll use a car, they'll use a bomb, they'll use this, they'll use that. But we never see it unless it's with guns or multiple guns or whatever it is that are able to kill people in a pretty quick amount of time and kill people in this massive a way. It's, you know, it's always guns that do these things right now.
I just think that the measures that are in place now aren't working, and we've got to try something different. And that trying something different doesn't mean I want to take away people's guns. But I think that there should be some restrictions on the guns that people have. And, if this guy were only to fire a couple of shots at once and have to reload, people can run away. Or if somebody couldn't get a hold of a gun, if it's a knife, well, people can run away. And you're getting these massive massacres these days because of the technology. And look, if my understanding is they didn't ban the bump stocks, which seemed like a no-brainer to me, and if they can't ban something like that in the United States, I mean, what chance do we have to try to get our head around this issue? Because there are a lot of mentally disturbed people out there, but I also think it's a mistake to think that some of these people are just mentally disturbed. They may be angry, they may be evil, they might be isolated. Was every Nazi mentally disturbed? I don't think so. It was the power of the environment that they were in. And today, as I mentioned before, you can go on the internet and just have that niche world that you interact with and think that that's normal. I'll tell you something really disturbing. I have two friends who are, one's an American and one's a New Zealander, who are both overseas. And both of them, contacted me after this incident, and both essentially said that it's the Muslims' fault for all the terrorist attacks that's been going on, and then some apparent Christian has done something like this, or somebody calling himself a Christian doing something like this. They're just finally fighting back. But if you look at the figures in America, for example, most terrorist incidents are domestic. They're homegrown.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, whenever you go online, you see the list of all the mass killings here in the U.S., they're almost exclusively white males. And that's generally how it goes.
I've got that information for you on the bump stock.
Yeah, Raj.
So apparently it's coming up really soon. The new rule goes into effect March 26th. So this is 90 days after it was originally filed in the Federal Register. The final rule clarifies the definition of machine gun in the Gun Control Act. This is from the ATF. And National Firearms Act includes bump stock type devices that allow a semi-automatic firearm to shoot more than one shot with a single pull of the trigger by harnessing the recoil energy of the semi-automatic firearm to which it's affixed so that the trigger resets and continues firing without additional physical manipulation of the trigger by the shooter. So
some sort of ban is going into effect?
Yeah, a nationwide ban of bump stocks is going into effect March 26th. So in another, 2 weeks almost? Yeah. So that's I just found from the ATF website.
Texter just corrected me. I keep saying AK-47. AR-15 is the weapon that's used in most of the mass shootings here in the U.S., so I apologize about that. But
there's one other thing that's interesting, and that is police here in New Zealand, as a rule, do not carry guns with them. What they do is, and this is well known here, they usually have a rifle in the trunk of their car, and if there's a problem, they go to their car, get the rifle out, and use it. That's well known here, with one exception, and this is kind of odd. Recently, like in the past couple of weeks, there was a shooting incident in Christchurch, and until they found the subject, the police commissioner down there had ordered police officers in Christchurch to carry sidearms. And that's kind of ironic. And that was a recent incident here. But as a rule, police officers, you won't walk around New Zealand and see any police officer with a sidearm. I've never seen it. Well, and they always have to run to the trunk of their car to get their gun if there's an incident.
Well, Robert, it'll be interesting to see what does change in the end here. The PM there says that the gun laws are going to change, but there's going to be an argument. Now that you tell us that, here's what the argument you're going to hear from the other side. You already know what it is. If these police would have been armed and ready, this attacker wouldn't have been able to incur all the damage that he did, wouldn't have been able to produce this carnage. But the police need to be better armed. I mean, here in the U.S., when the synagogue was attacked, people were saying they should have armed guards. I mean, that's always the rebuttal on the other side is we need more weapons. The good guys need weapons to be there. And so there's going to be talk that the police in New Zealand ought to be carrying sidearms and be ready to go when something like this happens.
Yeah, you know, I don't have the answer, but I think we have to do something different. The bomb stocks is a start. But if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you always got. And we have to do something different to try to change the roll of the dice here and what's happening, because what's happening is unacceptable. It's just unacceptable. And, of course, there are problems with the Internet as well and all sorts of issues around that. So it's a very complex issue. But the bottom line is, by the time people get, I think somebody's going to, if you want to get a gun, whether you're mentally disturbed or not, I think most people will be able to get a gun. You know, steal a gun, buy a gun on the black market. And so I'm not a big believer in background checks. I'm not sure how, you can just get around these things.
You will, that doesn't. If we're making it more difficult, then that's a good step, right? It should be more difficult, take more time. Hopefully, that either prevents them from eventually doing it or gives more time for authorities or somebody to be alerted that this person is looking for a weapon, anything that makes it harder, we would like. You talk about things have to change. I'll be very curious to see how things do or if they do change in New Zealand, because here in the U.S., somebody wrote this long ago, and I've repeated it ever since. We said we're never going to change things once Sandy Hook happened. Once a bunch of innocent kids were slaughtered and we didn't change a gun law, that meant we're okay with this. This can happen in America, and we're going to allow it to happen. So I don't count on things changing here.
The other issue is, and it's a huge issue, it wasn't that long ago where somebody had put plans online that you can download the plans make your own, like, plastic gun or whatever that actually fired. Now, it might not be, you know, rapid fire, but still people getting the stuff off the internet. And, in, you know, there's bomb-making instructions on there as well. It's a really tricky situation with trying to balance out people's right to have access to information versus, you know, how far does it go? Plans for a nuclear bomb?
Yeah. Well, and that's the other question, right? I mean, you know, people here are saying, oh, well, so this genius, now we need to ban the internet. And so there's going to one extreme. But on the other extreme, if you're going to defend your right, if we're not going to call for any gun restrictions ever, well, then why can't people just have bazookas? When are people going to be able to, you know, have bombs? If there's no lower limit restriction that you're willing to go along with because you think, oh, next we ban the internet, next we ban this, you have to ban everything. Well, what's the upper limit? Where do things get banned? If we should have semi-automatic weapons, why not automatic? Why not something bigger? Why can't you own a tank? I mean, are there any places where we actually draw the line either on either side? Everybody gets, you know.
I think we need the internet, and in situations we need guns, but there need to be limits, and the limits that are on there now are not acceptable. I think that's clear. Something different has to be tried.
Well, that's the thing that we always run into, right? Can we take one quick call before we let you go, Robert?
Sure.
Hold on 1 second. Let me try to make sure you're locked in, and let's say hi to Jim in Crestwood. Jim, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say I'm not against guns. You should be allowed to own a gun, but I think the gun owner should have to have some form of insurance, you know, because like concealed carry, okay, somebody does something to me, and then I go to shoot that person, but I miss and I hit the other person. And also, when you get rid of a gun, you know, too many people say, well, I gave it to my uncle or I sold it. As soon as they get rid of that gun, they should be responsible for telling the authorities that they no longer have that gun and who that gun went to.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate the call. And I think that's the type of thing that has been fought against, universal background checks and all, you know, a gun registry, things like that. People not only want their guns, they really want to protect their privacy with their guns, it seems like. Robert,
Obviously, you don't really need a semi-automatic weapon to do that, though, do you?
No, you don't. And I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. I mean, I think that there is a middle that people can meet in, that we can, you know, you have a rifle to protect your house, have a six shooter, have things like that. And I know we're never going to get away from all that, but the ability for people to kill people and create mass casualties like this, you're right. Something needs to change. It's not going to change here in America. We've gone over this. We go over it all the time. We've killed people in churches. We had the synagogues. We've had little kids in grade schools. We had people at nightclubs. We had people in Las Vegas. We've pretty much covered just about everywhere we could do mass shootings, and nothing has said to the American people, we have to do something to try to prevent this from happening. So New Zealand will be interesting to see, because it's a country that does have guns right now. The PM has said we're going to change our gun laws. It'll be very interesting to see what does happen. Robert, I'm very sorry for what went on over there. I hope you're doing okay. Have you been back to the States at all lately, buddy? Have you been to the States at all?
I have not. My wife is a Muslim, and she was very disturbed by this.
I can only imagine.
And, you know, the people in New Zealand are just in shock, because it's a very isolated country. It's a very quiet, peaceful country here. And, you know, the last thing I want to say is that I think part of the problem is that there are so many simplistic labels that are being thrown around now, and we paint people in boxes, you know, like you're a Republican or you're a liberal, you know, and people are more complex than that, than Democrat or Republican or liberal and conservative. I mean, we're more complex, we're more complicated, and I do think to a certain extent part of the problem out there is the conservative media and the way they are selling a product. And I don't for a minute think that everyone on Fox News, for example, believes in the things that they are claiming. And it's certainly not fair and balanced. It frustrates me. I can't even watch it. It makes me so angry sometimes. I mean, they may have some good stories on there, but it's all one-sided. You know, it's the Trump Channel.
No.
It's state-run TV.
I understand what you're saying. A lot of people, of course, are going to disagree with that. I would say that MSNBC tiers trends a little bit to the other side, and CNN does a little bit too. But I think the problem is not as much to me when we talk about an incident like this. To me, it's not as much Fox News. It's Alex Jones and InfoWars and the really out there, the QAnon and all the crazy, crazy stuff where people are really putting out, you know, the insane theories. I mean, yes, Fox News is not fair and balanced, but I don't think they're advocating for this in the way that others are. And I think that's the scary part. The internet and all these places you can find whatever you want to find and find like-minded, deranged people to justify whatever thoughts you're having or to create more fervor. That's what really scares me out there. And there's not much in the technology that we have today that's going to limit that. People are going to keep finding more and more ways to get their hateful messages out. And so I think that goes back to what you were saying from the beginning, from the top and from our leadership. We need more of this is not right. This is not how things should be. And a stronger presence with that would certainly be nice. Robert, I appreciate you so much coming on the phone with us. Again, the book, American Intolerance, Our Dark History of Demonizing Immigrants. Our best wishes to you and your wife and everybody there in New Zealand. And thank you so much for your time as always.
Look, thanks for having me. And how hard is it to call out white supremacy and hatred? People need to do it more.
We'll see if it gets better. Thank you so much, Robert. We got to get to the news here in a minute on 720 WGN. Hey everybody, Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. If you missed anything or want to share a conversation with Robert Bartholomew with anybody, it'll be podcasted later today and available. Jess will get that up at WGNradio.com. You can follow us on Facebook at The Matt Bubala Show, on Twitter at Matt Bubala, and on Instagram at Matt Bubala. Ross was holding on for a while here, so I wanted to get him in before we go. Hey, Ross, good morning. You're on 720 WGN.
Good morning. From listening to the conversation, I think one of our key problems is the language that we use when we are speaking about guns and the lack of knowledge that a lot of our politicians have when they are speaking to the type of guns that we should ban.
Okay.
I think the key thing, too, is we need to be able to appeal to both sides of the aisle, but we need to figure out a way to where we're speaking to them in a language that they understand and that they're not necessarily feeling threatened that we're coming after all the guns.
Mm-hmm.
But also make sure that whoever we get up there that is speaking to this is well-knowledged in all the types of guns that we are wanting to ban. There have been several cases where Democrats who were speaking to gun control had got up there and they were not clear or understood the gun that they were speaking on and got tore apart by these people that understand and are very knowledgeable about guns.
So you think if they did a better job, they could get some sort of gun control through? Because it seems to me that the gun lobby would say that any gun control is a threat to gun ownership and that it's, you know, kind of a slippery slope and they don't want any protection.
But it has worked in the past. I mean, you look back in the 80s, we ended up pushing for a gun control on the fully automatic weapons, like the Uzi is actually no longer in existence in the United States unless it's through a private owner with a special license. It can work with the proper communication tools.
Yeah. Well, so when did the Uzi get banned in the U.S.?
I believe it disappeared when they did a ban on the fully automatic weapons. I don't remember the exact year.
So was that the assault rifle ban, which happened after Reagan was shot?
Yes, I believe so.
See,
and once that happened, you saw the decline in those type of weapons in the United States.
And then we let that expire, right?
And right,
so we
yeah.
don't have that ban anymore. And then things like the AR-15 and other things have replaced those guns and are the prevalent ones. Why can't we just bring back whatever we passed after President Reagan was shot?
Well, that's the deal. The fully automatic ban is still in place. The semi-automatic, which is what the AR-15 is not. And that's where part of the problem and the distinction needs to happen, because the AR-15 is not the only threat.
So
there's a hunting rifle that just looks like a hunting rifle, has the same capabilities mm-hmm. as the AR-15. And that's part of the problem that we're not addressing and looking at as far as communicating what needs to happen, what type of weapons specifically. Are we just going after the AR-15s or any gun, regardless if it looks like a hunting rifle or not,
right?
Should it be banned? And we're not addressing that.
Ross, was the assault rifle ban, was that only automatic weapons then, that semi-automatics have always been legal?
Well, the AR-15, yeah, semi-automatics have always been legal. You could always buy a semi-automatic gun, which was like your handguns.
AR-15 have been banned under the assault weapons ban when that was in effect?
I believe the style that it was, they put it onto the ban. But part of the problem with that, too, was I believe, and I think it still is, easily convertible to fully automatic.
Right.
If you have the right parts. And that was the other thing that never got addressed, was making that impossible to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, like I said, I am for gun control. I really am. And I just believe language is the key here. And also, be clear and concise when we're talking about universal background checks, as far as what does that mean, what are we looking at, and being careful to not have the loopholes in there, and also to be careful on the other end and make sure that we're not using this as a discrimination tool against others.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. We'll see if anything changes. Ross, I appreciate the call. Have a great weekend, buddy.
You too.
Thank you so much, and thank you for holding on. 312-981-7200. Well, we're not going to get the answers tonight, and we'll see if any answers are coming. Nothing's going to happen here in the States with this, of course, because this wasn't something that even happened here. But I think we're going to see the same arguments for and against, and we'll see if things change in New Zealand at all, and if it makes a difference. And there just isn't enough of a groundswell to make any changes here, and so we keep moving on. The 737 MAX, I tried to get David Soucy, our friend, the CNN flight investigator, back on the phone this weekend. He's the author of the book Why Planes Crash. WhyPlanesCrash.com is his website. They had a death in the family, unfortunately, so he was not able to join us this week. But, you know, we had him on last week talking about the anniversary of MH370, and then the next morning we find out about this crash in Ethiopia, the second now 737. We touched on the 737 with him just for a moment or two during that conversation. But here we have a second crash, and now around the world, the planes are grounded. And disturbing reports coming out about complaints about the plane, what Boeing was, you know, knew. As David said, they've got a software update coming up. He was saying, you know, that it's very safe and it's just these certain things. But then after that crash, he was saying a day or two later on Twitter that he would not get on that plane. He would not put his granddaughter on that plane. And that's very interesting. And, you know, he was talking about these planes that take away a lot of control from the pilots. And it's going to be very interesting. Hopefully next weekend we can talk more about what they're finding out. Things will be found out this week. But it sounded like that what we're, the latest we're reading on the on that flight was that the pilots were having trouble from the get-go. From takeoff, they were asking to return. The plane was increasing, decreasing speeds. They weren't controlling it. Sounds like it possibly a terrible software malfunction, but You know, President Trump was right in a sense that these pilots have to be able to fly these planes. And I think what he's not addressing, though, and what David Soucy was talking to us a little bit about, the concern, my guess is, from Boeing and Airbus and from the airlines, is, as David was saying, it used to be we had all these pilots coming out of the military who had been trained to fly planes under duress and all these different things. Now we have a much more civilian pilot population who hasn't gone through that crazy extensive training of high stressful situations. So they're trying to make the planes easier and easier for somebody to fly to avoid those situations or to help the planes get through them themselves. And maybe some of that is, you know, you end up taking more risks or running into problems maybe you didn't foresee with software or things like that that previously wouldn't have been the case. And President Trump said, listen, I don't want an MIT scientist, and we need pilots flying these planes. We're changing them too much. I think, you know, of course they're going to change. You know, the airlines are demanding more fuel efficiency, more room, more this, more that. And, you know, there's this huge demand for pilots. There's going to be all these new pilots coming in over the next 20 years. These planes, without that military training, probably need to be able to do more for the pilots that are going to be flying them. So you can understand why these changes are being made. But it's a scary thing to have two of those planes go down, them not being able to exactly figure out why. But I was reading a story earlier today, or over the last couple of days. You know, one thing is, there's not a lot of options. This plane will fly. They'll figure out what's wrong, and they'll fix it. And here's why. Because all these airlines have ordered this plane. If they decided that's it, we're canceling it, we're not ordering this plane, and they went to Airbus, the same plane from Airbus, more or less, is on like a, is on, they have so many they have to make because there have been so many airplane orders for both companies. If everybody canceled these Boeing orders and went to Airbus, they'd be waiting more than 10 years to get their planes. So they're going to buy the Boeing planes. Boeing's got to figure out what went wrong and fix it and make sure it's not going to happen anymore. But these planes are going to fly. We'll just see what changes are made to them or the software. But the other thing that was interesting that I was reading was, you know, the 787, Boeing 787, which is a very popular jetliner, had fire issues a couple of years ago. They had a couple different fires. I can't remember if they had a fatal one or not. I don't think they did. But one caught on fire when it was parked, another one in the air. And so I think they temporarily grounded the planes while they checked on this. They've never figured out what happened, why they made a bunch of changes to the planes to try to catch things earlier or, you know, put in all these other precautions. But they don't know why those fires started. All these years later, this is like 4 or 5 years later now, I think. And it's the most popular plane in the world. It's the biggest selling Boeing airplane of all time. They never figured out why that happened. They figured out how to mitigate the problems if it does happen. So there's not perfection when it comes to these things. But it's going to be very interesting in the week ahead. We'll hear a lot more as they have the black boxes now and they're checking. I mean, we still don't know very much about the Lion Air crash, and that's a few months ago. It's a scary time. So I think they made the right call in grounding those airplanes. Boeing was very hesitant to do so, which I think was bad PR on their part. I know it's tough for them to tell all these different airlines to ground the planes for a while, but it would have been the smart thing to do, I would think. I don't know why they dragged their feet on it. The U.S., I believe, was the last country in the world to ground the planes. Now, you might say, well, we never had any issues here in the U.S., so they probably feel that better training, better this, better that, if they were okay. But if you've had two of them go down and you cannot say this is exactly why, how do you not just say, let's ground the planes until we figure out what's going on? 312-981-7200. We've got Orion Samuelson coming up with the morning show in just a little bit here on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out with us this weekend, everybody. We'll be back next Saturday morning at 1 a.m., 1 to 5 a.m. We've got to bring our friend Kim Bellaware back pretty soon to talk about the mayoral race that's coming up. Our friend Lindsay Rice, who used to write for DNA Info, she's been on the show a few times. She bought, and I don't know if you remember this, Raj, I don't remember if you were on the show with me at the time. I interviewed these girls, it's got to be 5 years ago or close. They own a company, and Lindsay just bought it from them called the Tata Top.
I don't remember.
The ta-ta top, this is fascinating, is a bikini top.
Okay.
That looks like bare breasts.
Oh, lovely.
Well, they do it. They do it because they fight for equal, you know, rights for women, that, you know, guys can walk around shirtless.
Oh, sure.
There's a lot of, you know, issue. I think it's a big thing with breastfeeding and women being told cover up and this and that and this and that.
Okay.
So they've got this wonderful top, comes in all different shades, whatever color your skin is, you can match it, make it work. It's nice. It's really cute. And then they donate profits to women's groups and things like that. Hopefully we'll have Lindsay in soon. So we'll have some fun stuff coming up here on the show, and I'm sure we'll do more on the 737 Max. Mm-hmm. Texter said, correcting me, it was the 787 Dreamliner's batteries that were starting on fire.
Oh,
and well, they never figured out why, but they've...
I don't know if you heard one of my earlier reports from ABC, their aviation reporter, was mentioning that they found the screw, or one of the screws, that helps move...
Yeah, the vertical stabilizer.
The vertical stabilizer was in the nose down position.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know they're going to be looking at everything.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I'm thinking it might not just be one thing. It could be several things, because I also read after the plane went down that the pilots came out saying that they were not allowed enough time when this plane came out to get what they felt was proper training, that they said they had some issues with the flying of the plane, the actual mechanics of it, and how it was manufactured.
Well, and I wonder if that was why they were holding off on grounding it here in the U.S., because I said this to David last week, that I wonder if there's training issues, because... there were some questions about that after the Lion Air crash, that maybe here in the U.S. they've had more training, they have more time. You know, there's stricter measures from the FAA, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wondered about that as well, and we'll find out as time goes on.
Sure.
But that's interesting with the stabilizer, because in hearing that about it being in the down position. So what kind of flaw was that? Was that a reaction made by the pilots that screwed things up, or was that a software question or some sort of override? Because they're talking about it speeding up, slowing down, doing different things like that. There was questions about the pilots, as David talked to us about last week, not being able to take control of the plane when they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't bring this up with David last week, but I keep thinking about it as he's talking about there's a software fix they're going to do, and we're talking about software on an airplane, and I wonder, you know, how much of the airplane is accessible? You know, when we lost MH370, we heard about the pings and all these things, these ways that airplanes communicate with satellites and things mm-hmm. like that. I wonder if there will be growing concern or a threat at all, or maybe it's silly, that a plane could be hacked into.
Oh.
And I don't know, maybe that's impossible, maybe that can't be done, but if we're relying so much on software, and I would imagine data is being sent, I don't know, maybe it's impossible, but it makes me think that, like, if there's some software issue or something is, you know, the vertical stabilizer is in a position it shouldn't be in, would the pilots have done that? Would that be a software malfunction that happened, or is it possible that there is... you know, a chance for a cyber attack for an airplane.
But here's the other thing. Both planes, the identical things happened. They took off, but as they were climbing,
right away. Yeah.
Then they encountered an issue.
Yeah.
And had to return back and never got back. Right. So as they're taxiing, as far as we know, there was no issue.
Right.
It wasn't until after they started to rise that they found an issue, that there was something. Alarms went off, the controls jammed, whatever. So, who knows?
Hopefully they will find out.
Yeah.
Coming up here and over the next week. Are we going to buy a lottery ticket tomorrow?
It's pretty big, isn't
it? Half a billion, about.
Yeah, I think I might have to. I'll get one this morning
there
when I go home.
There you go.
I haven't bought one in so long. I really have.
I know. When we had all these almost billion-dollar ones, you're like, I never buy it.
Yeah.
You think you got to spend $2 on this one, right?
Well, when I go get my chocolate donut on the way home this morning, I'll pick
it up. Wait, what? We can't have pizza? Why do you get a chocolate donut?
I buy one for Bridget and one for myself.
There's your excuse.
I know.
Doing something nice for the wife. Well,
yeah.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown. All right, let's take one last quick break, and then we'll see if Orion Samuelson's online to say hello to us here on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out with us till 5 in the morning, everybody. We appreciate it. We'll be back here next week on 720 WGN at 1 in the morning. Joining us right now on the phone from warm, I'm guessing, Arizona is Mr. Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Big O.
Well, good morning and greetings from WGN West here in Scottsdale, Arizona, where we're finally seeing some temperatures warming up, 67 degrees now, and they're saying 80 by Monday. But it's been kind of a tough winter out here, too, with snow at low altitudes in the mountains. That's welcome because that will turn into water for the crops that they grow here in the valley. And so we're looking forward to it. And, of course, baseball season is underway out here.
Yeah.
And snowbirds and baseball fans back in the valley, don't even try to go to a restaurant without reservations.
Yeah, and spring break coming up for a lot of people, so I imagine it's getting really crowded out there with the tourists right now, right?
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is, and it's going to be crowded for a while. But then when the teams leave town, a lot of other people leave town as well because it starts to warm up and
sure.
get a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, so. You got about 2 weeks left till people start clearing out. How long is the next time you're back home here? Is it going to be warm here?
I think so. I'll be back about April 30th. We're doing some work with the Mayo folks out here, as I have for the past year or two, for a back problem. But I think we'll get those done and head back in time for the opening at Arlington Park Racecourse. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. Well, hopefully you're bringing some warm weather back with you by then. Hope by the end of April, we got to get some good weather here, Orion, I would imagine.
You're absolutely right. And I'll start shipping it back now and then have it back in full force. Yes.
That would be nice. Yeah, every little bit would help. And, you know, it seems like we're starting to have, you know I live right off the Fox River. And every time I pass that river on 90 and I look over right now, it's looking very high. I imagine with all the water runoff from the melting snow this last week, we have a lot of high water situations around the state.
And we'll have even more across the whole middle section of the country in the waterway system because, you know, just south of St. Louis on the Mississippi comes in the Missouri River and then the Ohio River. And so there'll be a lot of water moving through the inland waterway system, and it is creating some concern. I'm going to be talking about that this morning, among other things, that it could delay planting season because of the rain and the melted snow.
So. Yeah.